Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the titties at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future. We're going to be talking about the South Korean Free Trade Agreement and these insane tax handouts that we just seem to have to give away. Life cannot go forward until the very wealthy have their windfall. And all I can say today is one word. Bernie, Bernie, Bernie. I don't know if you saw it. I don't know how you could have missed it. Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, took to the floor of the Senate and spoke for about 8 hours. Reminiscent of Mr. Smith goes to Washington, only here it was Mr. Bernie. Mr. Bernie went to Washington and let them have it. Look, at the end of this, it's unconscionable that we're going to hold the unemployed hostage so that the very well-to-do can have more. We're going to hold job creation back so that the very well-to-do can have more. Just as we've been doing for the last 2 years, pandering to the Republicans, pandering to them. Why? Because they're the party of no. Nothing moves forward in the party of no, in no land, without their getting their pound of flesh for the handful of very wealthy people in this country. And, you know, what's interesting is I think maybe we're starting to see the Democrats growing a spine. Problem is, they're growing a spine against their own guy. Bill Clinton was out today talking about, well, we need to do this, we need to move forward, we need to, you know, have these tax cuts. At some point, as we've been saying all week, you got to draw a line in the sand and say, look, we are in favor of cutting taxes for 99% of the people, 98% of the people, 99.7% of the people. But we cannot give away billions of dollars to a handful. There are better ways to use those resources. And if you look at the Joint Committee on Taxation, they're a congressional group, the tax cut deal will add $857 billion to the federal debt over the next 10 years. The two-year tax cuts for the wealthy are going to cost $407.6 billion of that. So almost half of that is going to the top 2%. And amazingly, more than a quarter of it is going to the top 1%. But we don't seem to have a problem with that. The total effect on the tax provisions alone will add up to $801 billion in foregone revenue over the next 10 years. So stop and think about it. We're adding 800 $157 billion to the debt. Plus, we're not going to get over $800 billion in revenue back. I'm trying to figure out how it is that this is going to spur the economy, how this is going to create jobs, and more importantly, how is this going to, solve our budget problems? You know, I keep hearing everyone, oh, God, worry about the budget, especially when it has to do with helping working people. We can't extend those unemployment benefits for those folks who've been laid off since Bush tanked the economy. No, can't help them. Sorry. Pick some oranges and sell them on the street corner. But the billionaires, the people who did tank the economy, the people who were responsible for this, we're going to reward them with more? What sense does that make? Does it make any sense to you? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, because I'm not getting it. Just not getting it. And the president was on NPR today, and he was asked about how keeping the tax rate for the very wealthy creates any jobs. In fact, the exact question is how keeping the tax rate for the richest the same as it's been for a decade, how does that create one single job? And the president's answer was pretty straightforward.
It doesn't, which is why I was opposed to it, and I'm still opposed to it. It doesn't, which is why I was opposed to it, and I'm still opposed to it.
It doesn't, and we know that. But he went on to say, the issue here is whether he thinks that the tax cuts for the wealthy are good or smart or have to do with that. He says he's repeatedly said he thinks it's not smart the thing to do. It's not smart policy because you're going to have to borrow to pay for it. And here's where I think he's right. The problem is that the single issue Republicans are willing to basically tank the whole deal just for this. So the question he has, do you allow millions of people to suffer to make your point, or do you make the deal with the devil, which he's had to do here? I don't know. What would you do? Personally, I got to say I'd fight this to the end. I wouldn't have made an agreement early. But there's this thought that there's job creation down the road. Oh, they're going to create jobs with all this money. And if you remember, the Washington Post noted earlier this year, 9 years we've had the Bush tax cuts. 9 years. There has been zero job creation in the past decade. A net of zero. So we know this does not work. And everyone knows it doesn't work. But it's like we're the good sheeple. We follow the leader to the slaughter. And we, the working people, honestly and truthfully, we are being slaughtered.
Bernie, I was watching it on C-SPAN, and Bernie was doing a magnificent job, but he said something which encapsulates how crazy it is. He said, this is insanity. He said, under this plan, Rick, get this, the Walton family, during the course of these tax breaks for the super rich, the Walton family themselves will get more money than the $250 stipends for everyone on Social Security for 1 year, which has been proposed. Can you imagine that?
They shot it down.
Can you imagine that?
So,
and
yes,
they shot down the $250 stipends for people who will use and need every one of those dollars. But yet we have billions, billions and billions for the super rich, and one family will get more than all of the senior citizens under that $250 stipend for Social Security recipients. If that isn't insanity, if that doesn't encapsulate how crazy this is, I thought that was brilliant on Bernie's part.
No, come on. We know this stuff, though. It's not, you know, this isn't rocket science. We know it already. We know that it goes back to what my high school government teacher said. He said, look, at the end of the day, Republicans are always going to be for the very, very wealthy and big business. That's who they are. Democrats generally will be for a larger government, more social programs, and the poor. You folks in the middle, and this is where this whole rub is. You folks in the middle, you're going to pay for both of them. So you have to decide which you're closer to. Are you closer to being extraordinarily wealthy, or are you closer to living in poverty? Most people in this country, being the eternal optimist, I guess, believing in American exceptionalism and how wonderful we are, seem to think that they're closer to being very, very wealthy. They're closer to Bill Gates than they are someone living in a housing project, which I don't want to burst anybody's bubble, but the reality is you're closer to poverty than you are to millions. But we like to have this. We like to have this vision of ourselves, this inflated, bloated vision, because, you know, it's good. I mean, it's good. I like to think that I'm going to do better tomorrow than I did today. I like to think that in 10 years I'll be better off than I was 10 years ago. But the reality doesn't always play out that way. So in looking at it this way, who do you identify with? Right now we're identifying with the Republicans. And I'm wondering how the pulse of the American people, I wonder how that pulse is speeding up right now. Is it anger? Is it excitement? What is it? Because I think the Republicans right now are overplaying their hand. They're ramming down these huge handouts that we can't afford. Look, if this were a flush economy, if this were the Clinton years, when jobs were plentiful, we were at full employment, and they wanted to give these big handouts then, it would be something to talk about, something to consider. But in the worst economic climate in at least my lifetime, and probably yours too, Jake, to say we're going to hand these billions out, to me, just seems kind of dumb. Purely from a kitchen table, because they've sold us on this kitchen table economics. They really have. They sold us on this, you know, it's just like at your kitchen table. You know, when you don't have money coming in, you cut the electric bill, you cut. Because that's what they want to do to our government. They want to slice and dice and not even with a fine razor. They want to go in with a hatchet and just chop things off at the knees. Because that's what you would do at your kitchen table. So they've sold us on this kitchen table mentality. So if we're gonna use that frame, let's all move to the kitchen table. Are these hundreds of billions of dollars for people who do not need them? Absolutely don't need it. And they're not going to create jobs in this country. They're not going to do, because the last 9 years have proven that to be the case. Is there a better use for this money? Or just leave it and not borrow it? Here's an idea. Just say, I'm sorry, you're going to get enough, up to $250,000. There's a $27,000 tax break for someone making $564,000 a year instead of the $70,000 that we want to give them. You know, that $27,000 is enough. You don't need the rest. Sorry, times are tough. And leave it at that. That, to me, that's, if you're going to use the kitchen table analogy, that's a smart thing to do. But no. We can't do that. Because we've got someone preaching to us how wonderful the wealthy are, and they're going to bestow employment upon us, and how they're going to give us these jobs. Well, where are they? We got almost 10% unemployment. This third quarter just passed. Wealthiest third quarter for investors in the history of this country. Largest corporate profits ever. Almost $1.7 trillion. Pure in your pocket, jing-a-ling-a-ling change rattling around. In fact, it's not even the change. It's that folding stuff with the big numbers on it. Not like the little money I got in my pocket. But, you know, we still buy into this. We still think, yep, they're gonna give us a job. They're gonna create jobs with all this wealth. And I think maybe they will. In China, in South Korea, in Malaysia, in India, anywhere but here. And I'm telling you, thank God for Bernie Sanders. Because finally, somebody did something worth talking about. We're going to take a quick break, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back with Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
We're Steelworkers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The United Steelworkers Union opposes passage of the Korean Free Trade Agreement. The USW says the agreement falls far short of what is necessary to ensure that U.S. workers and businesses have a fair deal. The union says important improvements were made in the agreement over the terms agreed to by the Bush administration, but after a careful examination of the terms, the steelworkers have decided to oppose the trade deal. The union has been deeply involved in discussions and consultations with the Obama administration over this agreement, providing specific proposals to improve it. The USW says auto sector provisions are very important to its members, but auto industry terms in this agreement fall far short of what the union feels are the minimum changes necessary to get USW support. The steelworkers say this agreement allows another flood of products shipped from China and other countries through Korea to allow them to benefit from this free trade agreement. At the same time, the union says it doesn't sufficiently open the South Korean market to U.S. goods. The USW says the decision to oppose the Korean trade agreement wasn't easy because the Obama administration has made effective implementation and enforcement of trade laws a priority, helping to advance the interests of USW workers in the steel, tire, and green technology sectors. More jobs for the U.S. auto industry were announced on Thursday. Jesse Russell has more.
Ford Motor Company announced $600 million would be invested in reformatting an assembly plant in Louisville, Kentucky. The company will use the plant to produce small sport utility vehicles, the Escape. The plant was previously used to produce trucks for Ford, but that work will now be shifted to the Chicago region. Currently, the company employs 1,100 workers at the plant, but when it begins production on the Escape in late 2011, it will need 2,900 workers. The 1,800 new jobs will be filled with auto workers who had previously been laid off in the region, and if that doesn't fill enough of the work, they'll be transferred in from other shuttered facilities. The company also expects to hire new workers for the plant. That's good news for the region, which had a 9.4% unemployment rate in October. Part of the reason Ford is willing to further invest in the plant is because Kentucky offered incentives to the tune of $240 million over 10 years.
UAW activists are joining with clergy and farmworker activists to picket 100 Chase Bank branches across the country today. The International Human Rights Day protest urges Chase to adopt a one-year moratorium on home foreclosures. Protesters also want Chase to use its influence as the lead banker for R.J. Reynolds to facilitate talks to improve living and working conditions for the farm workers who work the tobacco fields. UAW President Bob King says he's seen the squalid conditions tobacco farm workers endure, and he says Chase Bank has an opportunity and a social responsibility to bring R.J. Reynolds to the table to stop this human exploitation. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, let's get to it. Get stoked. Come on. Get it started. Come on. Get it started. Get it started. Let's get it started. Let's get it started. In here. Let's get it started. Let's get it started. In here.
You know, it's already started. The whole spin machine around this free trade agreement, around this chocolate-covered turd. Here it's coming. And the timing, you got to love the timing of this. In the Wall Street Journal today, you know, the newspaper of the investor class, they write, surging global demand for American soybeans, cars, diesel engines, and even artwork and antiques has pushed U.S. exports to a level not seen since before the financial crisis, boosting prospects for domestic economic growth. A 3.2% surge in exports in October, together with a 0.5% drop in imports, sent the U.S. trade deficit to a nine-month low. You know what that nine-month low was? $38.7 billion. That's according to the Commerce Department. The export gains were broad-based, the Wall Street Journal says, reflecting stronger sales abroad in industrial materials, food, autos, and a host of other categories. Joshua Shapiro, chief U.S. economist at the consultant group MFR Incorporated, said, it speaks to the revival of the global activity. The revival. Did I mention trade deficit? Still $38.7 billion October alone. Did I mention that? But they're trying to spin this so that we're more willing to accept this, really this bad deal. That's why I've asked Dave Johnson to come talk to us a little bit. He's from the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be back on.
You know, I'm looking at baby NAFTA, and I'm going, no, please, not again. And not again from a Democratic president.
Yeah, it's looking like this isn't the best trade deal, for a lot of reasons. I guess we heard it on the news just now, and then you've done a pretty good job of explaining it. You know, exports will go up under this, and that's a good thing, but the problem is that imports are going to go up a lot more.
Yep.
So it will cost jobs.
And EPI, as I understand it, is estimating over the next 5 years 159,000 jobs. Even the administration says it's not going to create that many jobs.
Yeah, that's right. And the problem with these kind of trade deals, and I guess you just to summarize it, it's a good way to put it, if these are NAFTA-like trade deals, is that they don't protect the labor standards in either country. They actually drive conditions down on both sides of whatever the trade border is, because they're enabling the people who, you know, they want lower wages and fewer employees here. They just want to cut their costs. It's enabling them to send jobs somewhere where the jobs are cheaper, but at the same time, then they can say to the workers here, you better double down, work harder, or, you know, your job's going to go too. And they do that on the other side of the border, same thing. So without good labor standards and careful wording to protect how investment happens, that's what happens. And we've seen it now for how long?
Yeah, I mean, this NAFTA was just signed the other day. Clinton signed it back in 1993. Just the other day, it didn't go into effect until January 1st, of course. But here we are, 16 years later. You look at all these job losses. Somebody benefited, and it wasn't we, the working class.
And it's both sides of the border, you know, because NAFTA lets our ag companies that have this subsidized corn sell corn at prices in Mexico that they can't compete with, so that the small farmers in northern Mexico are driven out of their jobs. They have to come north to get work here. So the effect is more widespread, you know. I mean, it's part of that immigration problem we have, too, because we cut out the ability to make a living there. And we cut out, you know, a lot of the jobs here, Flint, you know, places like that. So, yeah, that's what's going on here. Now, Obama wants a win, you know. He needs some wins. Yep. So he's ready to it looks like, I mean, I'm not going to speak for the motivations, but I am going to speak for what's happening. It looks like he's ready to just, you know, say, okay, I want this win now. I want to prove to the business community that I'm business friendly, I guess. I mean,
oh, I hate that. Oh, please, not the business friendly again.
Yeah, I know. And as we talked about last time, you know, that's just such a wrong way to put it, because what about the other businesses, the ones that get hurt by this kind of stuff, you know?
And what about the people who want to do the right thing? What about the people who want to stay here and want to create good paying jobs here in this country that you're putting at a disadvantage?
I used to run a company, and, you know, you don't get much of a choice. And it's the old Walmart argument. They say, look, you can complain about the stuff we're doing, but if we don't do it, Target will be doing it, and we'll be out of business, and then you'll be complaining about Target. And it's not up to them. It's up to us, we the people, to make the rules that help people on both sides of a trade border. And that's the problem with deals like this Korea deal that we've been following. And now it's coming to a head. And you know, a lot of the labor, they were very, very reluctant to go up against this, you know. And the UAW, they come out neutral pretty much, you know. They expect a gain maybe of 800 jobs if the Koreans buy enough cars, you know, 800 jobs. But they're, you know, they were helped by this administration with the GM, helping GM stay in business. So they feel like they owe it to the administration. And the administration did do a lot of changes to this thing, but they just didn't address the NAFTA-like stuff, you know?
The race to the bottom stuff.
Yeah, exactly. The race to the bottom stuff. And it's like, come on, guys. I mean, that's the main thing. There's another thing too I want to get into, and that's the idea of an economic and an industrial policy. But this race to the bottom, there's a second part of it, you see, because the other thing that happens with an agreement like this is that everybody here thinks like these free trade economists, you know, and then they get all surprised when you encounter a country like, I mean, a country, well, it's sort of both, like China or these other countries, that then they go and they have these national policies to bring the industries to their country. And they work with their companies there, or in China they might own them. And they have all of these policies in place to bring everything there. And then here we have this ideology, this weird free trade ideology that keeps us from thinking we ought to do that. And we call it interfering with business. And so then we come up against these giant machines that just eat up our, not just our jobs, but whole industries.
Yep. You know, as I've been saying for the longest time, I guess the comparison would be they have a plan. The Chinese have a very strategic plan. We believe in the invisible hand. So yeah. We have this invisible man with this invisible hand who's supposedly, hopefully, guiding the market. But the Chinese, they actually have a written out plan, and they're executing it. It would be like, the Super Bowl champions going out and executing their playbook, and you and me and 8 other guys or 10 other guys go out, we're going to go play against them with no playbook.
Not just that, but if we all thought it was wrong to plan with each other before we go to the game, that's what it's like, because that's what it is here. People say it's wrong to have a plan. Now, this is not to fault China, not to fault Korea.
Nope.
This is to say that we're stuck in this weird way of thinking where they say everybody's got to be on their own, and where China, they look after each other on things like this, and Korea they do. They feel like, it's to the benefit of us all if we have strong, solid industries, and so they plan everything around that. And it's all outside of trade agreements. The trade agreements can't really affect this. They're being smart. We've got to make sure that everything to get the auto industry. I mean, look at Korea. They didn't have an auto industry until recently. Now they've got Kia, Hyundai, and they're good cars. And
they're kicking our butts. And they're kicking our behinds.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. So you got it.
Yeah, I mean, look, when we're allowed to sell 7,000 cars in South Korea and they can bring 500,000 here, I don't know that that's really a free or a fair or any type of an agreement. And this agreement does very little to address that, in my opinion. We're going to be able to maybe send 75,000 at the maximum, and they're going to be able to dump 1,000,000. What's free about that? And then
exactly.
You get into the other part of this, which to me is the scariest part, this idea of 35% domestic content. With the European Union, they were able to negotiate 55%. We can't even negotiate as well as the Europeans.
That's right. Well, first of all, remember, just like NAFTA, Clinton came into office and NAFTA had been negotiated,
right.
So all these little tricks in it were already there. Clinton then said that they would have side agreements. They did have side agreements, but then they didn't get enforced, especially after Bush got into office. But this agreement was also negotiated by Bush. And so for Obama, it was a question of, do we just start over or do we try to make it better? And what they did was they tried to make it better with the things you said for the auto companies and better with the beef import problem. But the real problem there isn't part of the agreement. The problem with things like that are they have these auto safety standards. What we put into the agreement was they have to waive their auto safety and their auto pollution standards so that we can sell more cars. So it actually lowers their standards. And with beef, the problem is that everybody believes we've got mad cow disease.
Yep.
And when, of course, we're not doing the inspections we need to do. So it's more like we keep being dumb. We keep being free markety, We won't raise our safety and our pollution standards. We won't inspect enough beef. And other countries are saying, well, why should we, wait a minute. And so we try to force it in rather than do the right things, which is have a sound economic policy, a sound inspection policy, sound pollution policies and health and safety. Basically, we don't have a government.
Yep.
And we're sacrificing because of that.
I'm looking at this and at this agreement, and I'm thinking about the plant that Hyundai built in Alabama. And we gave them a bunch of tax dollars. They have touted it on their commercials as, we now make the car in the U.S. I'm looking at this trade agreement. There's really no incentive for them to keep that plant there now.
That's right. That's right, except maybe oil will get high enough that it costs enough to send a car on a boat over across the ocean. We can hope.
Well, when you look at the labor costs that they'd be saving by building it there and bringing in 65% of the parts from China, I'm sorry, I don't see the savings for them to stay here. It just doesn't make sense for them.
Exactly right. And, you know, but the thing is, this NAFTA-style deal is really one component of a bigger picture. And what's interesting, and I have a post over at ourfuture.org, the most recent one that talks about reluctant opposition to the trade agreement. The unions that are coming out against it, the steel workers, the communication workers, I just put up a post from the UE, which is United Electrical and other workers.
Right.
They talk about how, you know, the problem is bigger than just this agreement, but the problem is that we don't have good labor standards in the United States, and that we're doing a lot of, basically, they're not using these words, but they're doing a lot of, we're doing stupid things that are driving our wages down, driving our competitiveness down, and it's really, really showing up now that it's hurting our workers. We're not maintaining our infrastructure. We don't have a good industrial policy or economic policy. You know, all of those things are a bigger picture of this. This is a NAFTA-style agreement, but we've got to do a lot more. That's where the unions are starting to come in, and they're getting way beyond just their membership, and they're trying to address these more basic problems that we've got in how we've got our economy working, where, you know, it's all, everything's going to a few at the top at the expense of our competitiveness, our education, our infrastructure, and mostly our people.
Yeah, at some point, I'm hoping that the American people wake up. At some point, I'm hoping that our politicians wake up and say, you know what, we're not against trade. We're just against this kind of trade.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the Korean agreement, you know, it's just the latest. And then, of course, if they get this, they're going to try with Colombia and other agreements like that, which, once again, it's the same old problems. And what happens is that we just get, you know, the bank, State Street Bank, I think it's called, in Boston, this is right along the same lines. They just announced they had a huge increase in profits, 20% increase. And so what they did was they laid off, I think it was 1,400 people, and they put out a memo, and they said the reason for this, part of the reason for this is because we want to have a greater sense of urgency among the employees to work more efficiently.
Nice.
I'm letting that sink in for a minute. But that's what beautiful. That means is we did this to scare the bejesus out of all our employees so they'll work twice as hard.
and seeing that across the country, David.
That's
it's
right.
Just that this the company that you've pointed out, they're just brazen enough to come out and say it.
Yeah, in corporatese, but that's what they said. And that's the thing. That's what these trade agreements enabled. You know, we've watched the Roger and Me in Flint was 20 years ago. We watched that when that movie came out about what it does when these companies can move to Mexico or move the plant somewhere. They can take those jobs there, and then they come back here, and they say to you, they say, you better work harder, and you better take less pay, because we can do this to you, too, and you better shut up.
And you better not join one of those unions.
That's right. And if you do, you better keep your mouth shut and not strike or cause any trouble. And that's what the whole country's now going through, you know. And that's why wages haven't gone up for working people. And yet you see the other end of the result is this terrible concentration of wealth to a few at the top. And, of course, now we see the power, too. You know, I mean, in the middle of everything going on, they think they can get more tax cuts for the rich. You know, it's all part of a wound up ball of the same problem, really. And this NAFTA trade agreement kind of helped start it, but this Korean trade agreement will just make it worse.
Yep. And the Colombian one will be even worse than that because, you know, Colombia is a place where they throw trade unionists out of airplanes.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the argument you hear, they say, well, look, Colombia charges this huge tariff right now to import goods from the United States. So, see, this agreement will fix that. And it's like, I want to say, well, wait a minute. You mean we're letting them charge a huge tariff on our goods and we're not doing anything about it?
Yeah. See how dumb we are?
Well, put a huge tariff on their goods. Duh.
Well, but here's the thing, and this is the last line I've got for you. The reality is I've had conversations with people who are asking, well, whose interest are they negotiating this in? And it's not our interests, Dave. They don't care about us. They care about Wall Street. And Wall Street does very well in these agreements. NAFTA was a boon. It was a huge boom for Wall Street. You and I suffered, but they did very well.
Right. And Paul Krugman said it well the other day. You know, you can have these trade agreements, and they might raise the GDP of the country, But you can raise the GDP and have fewer jobs.
Yep.
Yep. And you know what? I don't think you got me shouting this time on your show. You got to say something that gets me shouting. Usually I get shouted.
They want to give $830 billion to the top 2%. They want to give half the money that they're going to borrow to the top 2%. And of that, 25% will go to the top 1%. Will that do it for you?
Yeah, that's got me shouting. Rick! Yeah, I know. I mean, I got to say, though, in Obama's defense, if Obama had been negotiating this deal from the beginning, I don't think we'd see a deal like this at all. The problem, you know, is more that he's willing to, he feels he needs a win, I think, and so he's ready to accept what they finally come through with because of this.
So we're going to let those criminals hold the unemployed hostage so that they can give the wildly wealthy a huge windfall. That's basically what you're telling me.
That's right. But the problem is, you know, as we all know, we're kind of upset that we feel like he should have fought harder. But
and that's where I'm at. Dave Johnson from the Campaign for America's Future. Ourfuture.org is the website. Lots of great stuff over there. Dave, always great to talk to you. Look forward to having you back again real soon.
Okay, well, thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Okay, boys and girls, pull out your crayons and let's see if you can do a better job of coloring than the Department of Homeland Security. At long last, the obvious has dawned on our national security czars. Since March 12, 2002, back in the Bush-Cheney regime, the chief connection that we the masses have had to America's massive and secretive Homeland Protection Program has been five colors: green, blue, yellow, orange, and red. That's been the full extent of our nation's terrorism alert system, which supposedly tells us how afraid to be at any given moment. Finally, though, top DHS officials have conceded what the rest of us have known for years. Their color-coded warning scheme is a kindergarten-level joke that communicates nothing and protects no one. Since 2006, the color has not changed. Orange. Every day, in every airport, the orange threat level is announced in a doomsday voice, every 5 minutes or so. It's useless information, so everyone tunes it out. Jay Leno has suggested that DHS should include plaid in its color scheme, for at least that would tell us that our country is under attack by Scotland. So DHS is giving up on its color code and is presently seeking a new public warning system that, quote, provides specific actionable information based on the latest intelligence. Intelligence? These are the people who miss clear clues about the 9/11 crash bombers, the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber, and others. So let's not count on their intelligence. This is Jim Hightower saying, how about a series of sounds that range from a ho-hum, not-to-worry sigh to a terrifying shriek of imminent doom? Or maybe just tell us when something bad is really about to happen. Perhaps shouting a blunt but useful message like, bend over and kiss your butt goodbye.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. From Kenesha, Georgia. Students at Kenesha State University's business class got an anatomy lesson. Recently, campus police say a part-time instructor took off all his clothes while teaching a class at the Atlanta College. Late last month, police arrested the 57-year-old man, charged him with public indecency because one student reported him. He's out on bond for $5,000. He was an economics professor. a business department professor. And what I find interesting is I'm sure he was, and I don't know what he was talking about, but I'm kind of sure he was teaching about how the investor class has pretty much screwed us, because corporate America has outsourced all the jobs that once made clothes. That's all I can come up with. Or he was trying to show the effects of trickle-down economics, one way or the other. Let's go to the phones. I got James on line one. How are we doing tonight, James?
Pretty good. You're probably not used to hearing me this time of day.
I wasn't. I was surprised when I saw the name on the call list.
Okay. Well, I just, you know, I mean, we've got this tax compromise. You've got this NAFTA Junior. I'm sure you'll agree with me that you probably share my belief that Obama might not be listening to the progressive majority anymore.
No, I think he's trying to, as Dave said in the last segment, he's trying to find something to declare victory on. I think that, and again, I think these are bad things to be declaring victory on.
I do too, and I'm starting to think more and more that one way to get the message across of how displeased progressives are so far, and I mean, I'm willing to see how things go, might be to consider maybe in 2012 the likes of a Les Feingold or an Alan Grayson maybe trying to put together a primary challenge.
That would be interesting, but here's my problem with Feingold here recently. He voted twice last Saturday against passing the two tax cut bills that would have only extended the middle class tax cuts. He was one of the four, Democrats. I was shocked that Feingold was one of them.
But if I remember correctly, you said that you probably thought he had a good reason.
I can't think of what it is, and I'm still looking for it. I did think he had to have a reason, but I got to find out what that is, and I haven't been able to find it. But at the end of it, he still voted against it twice. So, you know, I like Russ Feingold. I like him a lot. But there's some, you know, here's where we should go. Let's see how this plays out. Move down the road a little bit. Let me ask you this, James. What would you have done with this bill? Because the Republicans will let all the unemployed starve. They don't give a tinker's damn about the unemployed.
Well, and that's strange because I was going to actually do a little commentary on this and for my hub, which I think I've popped some of them up onto your Facebook pages.
Yep, love your writing.
I would have said, and this would have probably been a bit of a gamble. But I would have said what you've basically been saying with all this is that the Republicans are basically holding the unemployed hostage to benefit, and I would have said the people that basically got us into this mess.
Yep. Yeah,
I mean, but that's probably a gamble, but the only thing I see working.
But that only works if you have an active and informed electorate who's paying attention. And the Republicans have taken the pulse of the country, because I don't see the outrage. I don't see, I see on some progressive blogs, I see some outrage, but not people in the streets, not teabagger angry. That's concerning to me, James.
Well, then remember, this is also a country that when the Supreme Court decided that corporations had unlimited rights, nothing happened. So I see where you're coming from.
And this is on Sunday, the 10th anniversary of Bush v. Gore. So, you know, here we go. James, I appreciate the call. Thanks so much, buddy. Please call again.
I will. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Let's go to line two. We got Helen on line two. How are we doing tonight, Helen?
Hi. I've got 2 points. The last caller on Bob Durgin today got to talk for about 10-15 minutes, and he spoke about the Highmark report in the Post-Gazette Pittsburgh paper.
Got it right in front of me. Was going to get to it right here.
Okay, well, then I will let you get to it. And what I did about it, because Bob asked him, well, what would you do about it? I called my neighbor who works for an affiliate of them, and their contract is up, and her fellow workers and her boss, they're all wondering why they can't get the contract through. Well, I just told her, and she says, oh, I was just going to think about going out shopping for my grandchildren. I better not. I said, take them some cake or cookies and you
yep.
for Christmas.
And I'd say whoever's got high marks, you start calling and complaining. Whoever the, the policy holder.
You know, if it's the state employees, the union, and everybody else should start complaining that they shouldn't be allowed to have any more of our money, and we should have our Pennsylvania public option.
I'm right there with you.
And tomorrow at 12 o'clock at the union office up here on 43rd off Dairy Street in Harrisburg, you know, I sent you a thing about the Democrats. But I found out Mrs. Saratelli sent out that Mr. Sestak will be there at noon after the Democrats meeting is over in the building, and they will have a little luncheon.
Well, I hope people will go, but sadly enough, I'll be on the air at noon, so doing my weekend program.
But, I mean, it's just people can go talk to him. I don't know why he's going to be there. Some people thought it was going to be a thank you thing, but maybe he's out there to drum up some kind of support for progressive issues. I hope so, but I'm certainly going to go, even though I'm not a committee person, and anybody else can go and observe, too.
Yep. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. Helen, I appreciate the call.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
I was at a meeting with him today in another county, and he took questions for about an hour and 15 minutes, and a little bit surprised, he said he will support the bill as it is now. Yeah. Well, and a bunch of us disagree with him, but he was generous with his time, so I think it's well worth going and listening to what he has to say.
Was he sick? Because last night they bailed on me because he was sick.
Well, his voice was not very good. He claimed yesterday he was on several Fox News shows. Yeah. He was on Sean Hannity, so that's an experience. Yeah. If I can make another comment quick. One of the things that our first caller mentioned, and you asked him what would he do. Look, a lot of Democrats keep saying the same thing. They believe that the president punted. He punted on third down. There was enough time, instead of acquiescing early, and I think he did, and he didn't tell him, that's the first mistake. Second mistake is, I think he did have time. I think he did have time to exert some pressure on a couple key Republicans. He didn't even try. He just like throwing up his hands, and I think you said something key, he wants a victory. He wants a victory, but you know what? At what price? Be very careful. Be very careful that you take a video at any price.
I agree. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. I want to get back to this Highmark thing. You're gonna love this. It's a beautiful thing. Right back after this.
Stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Somebody's watching you like it. Somebody's watching you like it.
Holly Sklar from Business for Shared Prosperity. She's their executive director. She wrote it a piece, Tax Deal Like a Bait and Switch Mortgage. She said, quote, people used to talk about robbing Peter to pay Paul. Now it's more like robbing everyone to pay the richest 1%. And I got to tell you, that's pretty accurate. And we have this, what's amazing to me is we have this mentality that we need to be more business friendly, that we need to be more wealth friendly, that if we give the top 1% all of this accumulated wealth, that we'll have this honeydew trickle down on top of us, and we will all be much better. That hasn't worked. It hasn't worked in the last 30 years. It's not going to work in the next 30 years. We know that. And we have this mentality that, well, you know, we need to be more business friendly. So what does business do? They've had the greatest quarter in the history of the country. Almost $1.7 trillion in pure profit. So what do? They want more and more. And I look at this Highmark story. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette today, Bill Toland writes it. Highmark Incorporated has some of its employees, have asked their employees to be observed this week by outsourcing specialists who will determine which of their job responsibilities can and will be sent overseas in the coming year. Yes, this is real. Highmark evidently is the state's largest health insurance. They've been internally debating which of its back office operations, things like enrollment and tech positions, they're going to outsource. They've been doing this since 2009. Earlier this year, the company began offshoring some of its technology work to India through an overseas work center by this Houston-based company, Accenture. This new round of outsourcing talks is with IBM. So the American tech and computer company IBM is now a big outsourcing giant, and they've got a subsidiary in India, IBM India, as well as another company that they've sprung up, IBM Global Process Services. So they have these real nice names, and what do? They ship people's jobs overseas. So what Highmark has done is they're telling their employees, here's what's going to go on. These people are going to follow you around. They're going to spy on you. They're going to write down everything that you do, and they're going to find someone in India who can do it, as the story says, for 1/6 what you're willing to do it for. And what I find funny is the only jobs that aren't up to be shipped overseas are the ones where me as a customer, because evidently I'm going to have Highmark with my new job here. I'm not going to talk to hello, my name is Bob. I'm going to talk to somebody here. That job is sacrosanct. Everything else, all the support staff for the person I talked to on the phone, they may ship over to India. Stop and think about that. They're wildly profitable. Wildly profitable. This one woman that they interviewed for this story, she said, I'm worked up at my desk all day. I've been sitting here crying all day. The workers are all upset. In the one set, it's like adding injury to insult to injury. And again, I go back to this. Did you really think that this company cared about you? What they care about is the bottom line. And here's the part that really struck me. These reviews, this tailing, this spying, whatever word you want to use, this evaluation of what they're going to outsource, isn't going to be over for almost another year. So these people, you want to talk hostile work environment? I mean, really, you're going to go to work every single day and you're going to have somebody standing over your shoulder every single day writing down everything you do. To me, that's a hostile work environment. They're also doing it in West Virginia. Highmark's Mountain State Blue Cross Blue Shield, they're spying on their workers too. And here's the thing. They're going to send these jobs to the Philippines. They're going to send them to India where the costs are, like I said, 1/6 of the cost of an American worker. And, you know, we were told, if you remember, we were told that those are the jobs of the 21st century. Those computer jobs, those high-tech jobs, those customer service jobs, that was supposed to be it. Now look what they're doing. You've got some local legislators, as the article points out, that are looking into the possibility, as Highmark is a not-for-profit charitable organization. They're saying that Highmark has a special duty to preserve Pennsylvania jobs. So Highmark, they fire back. Well, it's not our fault. It's not our fault at all. Not our fault. No, we would never do anything like that. It's that Obama's fault. Yeah. It's Obama's fault. Because, of course, you know, you they passed that health care reform. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, stop and think about that for a while, Jake. I mean, audacity.
You're insulting the intelligence of the taxpayers of Pennsylvania. I mean, cut me a break. That's so fallacious on its base. And that's a good, you know, that's a good point, Rick. Why isn't there more a vigorous push to stop this legislatively? You said a couple. There should be outrage in the legislature. Outrage. Where is it?
Well, it's coming down to them saying, well, you know, we need to cut costs. And there's not going to be broad outrage because the majority of people are just thankful it's not them. You know, I'm really getting this bizarre sense that we really don't give a damn about each other. That we're just thankful it's not us. You know, because I did talk to a couple of people about this. And, well, you know, they can just go find other jobs. I'm going, really? That's your advice? You don't like it, go find another job? And again, it comes back to this idea that that the benevolent corporation is there to bestow employment upon you. And you should be grateful to the benevolent corporation. I mean, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting because I'm of the mindset where you get into that job and you make it better. You get in there and you say, okay, we're going to negotiate. We're going to lay down the rules of the game, so to speak. Yeah, I'm going to work for you. I'm going to work hard for you. I'm going to make a profit for you. I'm going to do everything I need to do. But in return for my labor, my hard work, my blood, sweat, and tears, I'm going to have a certain say. I'm going to have a certain voice. And they don't want that. And they will fight you tooth and nail. They will fight you tooth and nail. Well, it is the holiday season. Again, we're going to be doing our Hungry and Homeless for the Holiday event. I hope everybody put it on their calendar because I've been announcing it enough. It's almost ad nauseum. But you put it on your calendar December 18th, starting at noon all the way through December 24th at noon. We will be at the Giant Parking Lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street, collecting non-perishable food items to help the local food bank. We'll be collecting money to help both the food bank and the emergency shelter, Carlisle Cares. Again, you can go to our website, hungryandhomeless.org, to make a donation there. It is tax deductible. We're going to be doing some really good things. Santa Claus is coming to town. We're going to have a couple of choirs come and sing for us. The Bloodmobile will be there on the 23rd. And I want to thank ABF Freight for giving us a trailer. Evidently, they're gracious enough to give us one of their pups and of course, transport it back and forth for us. So we're grateful to those folks over at ABF and all of their workers. A good unionized company, and we're proud to be promoting them as well because they deserve it. They deserve a good word. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The United Steelworkers Union opposes passage of the Korean Free Trade Agreement. The USW says the agreement falls far short of what is necessary to ensure that U.S. workers and businesses have a fair deal. The union says important improvements were made in the agreement over the terms agreed to by the Bush administration, but after a careful examination of the terms, the steelworkers have decided to oppose the trade deal. The union has been deeply involved in discussions and consultations with the Obama administration over this agreement, providing specific proposals to improve it. The USW says auto sector provisions are very important to its members, but auto industry terms in this agreement fall far short of what the union feels are the minimum changes necessary to get USW support. The steelworkers say this agreement allows another flood of products shipped from China and other countries through Korea to allow them to benefit from this free trade agreement. At the same time, the union says it doesn't sufficiently open the South Korean market to U.S. goods. The USW says the decision to oppose the Korean trade agreement wasn't easy because the Obama administration has made effective implementation and enforcement of trade laws a priority, helping to advance the interests of USW workers in the steel, tire, and green technology sectors. More jobs for the U.S. auto industry were announced on Thursday. Jesse Russell has more.
Ford Motor Company announced $600 million would be invested in reformatting an assembly plant in Louisville, Kentucky. The company will use the plant to produce small sport utility vehicles, the Escape. The plant was previously used to produce trucks for Ford, but that work will now be shifted to the Chicago region. Currently, the company employs 1,100 workers at the plant, but when it begins production on the Escape in late 2011, it will need 2,900 workers. The 1,800 new jobs will be filled with auto workers who had previously been laid off in the region, and if that doesn't fill enough of the work, they'll be transferred in from other shuttered facilities. The company also expects to hire new workers for the plant. That's good news for the region, which had a 9.4% unemployment rate in October. Part of the reason Ford is willing to further invest in the plant is because Kentucky offered incentives to the tune of $240 million over 10 years.
UAW activists are joining with clergy and farmworker activists to picket 100 Chase Bank branches across the country today. The International Human Rights Day protest urges Chase to adopt a one-year moratorium on home foreclosures. Protesters also want Chase to use its influence as the lead banker for R.J. Reynolds to facilitate talks to improve living and working conditions for the farm workers who work the tobacco fields. UAW President Bob King says he's seen the squalid conditions tobacco farm workers endure, and he says Chase Bank has an opportunity and a social responsibility to bring R.J. Reynolds to the table to stop this human exploitation. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, you know, we're going to get the sledgehammer, I think. I don't know if you saw the story from the Associated Press. Corbett nominates Coal King Company CEO as to his cabinet. Governor-elect Tom Corbett tapped a coal company president and prominent GOP campaign donor from Central Pennsylvania to head the agencies responsible for numerous community and business aid programs. The guy's name is Alan Walker. He is from Bradford Energy Company. He's going to head the State Department of Community and Economic Development. Of course, Walker must pass the Senate confirmation process to get the job permanently. He is a member and past chairman of the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry and the Pennsylvania Coal Association. Again, two very, very, well, I would argue very anti-worker places. For years, Mr. Walker, his company was a prominent company among Pennsylvania's surface mining companies. He exited a couple of years ago to become a coal broker. So, I mean, I guess you've gone from bad to worse. While he is doing the job, he will step down from his energy company and put the ownership into a blind trust. Yeah, kind of like Cheney did. Yeah. Kind of like Cheney did, into a blind trust.
amazing stuff. I'll tell you. It's amazing. And looking at Corbett's team, he's taken some hits. He's taken some hits for the people that he's putting into his environmental transition team, especially. Because they're of the 30-member committee, 17 of them were lobbyists or lawyers that represented the gas drillers, the waste industry, the coal companies, the utilities, all the dirty things. These are the people going to be in charge.
You could see that coming a mile away, Rick.
And of course I could. But, you know, the reality is you would have thought they would have at least maybe kind of just a little bit tried to hide it. But no.
If you want to be realistic, he's holding all the cards.
Oh, man.
At least for 2 years.
And, you know, I look at the economic conditions that this state are in, and I look at the fact that this guy is not going to raise one single dime of taxes from the natural gas that they're going to be stealing out from under our feet. It's just absolutely, absolutely amazing. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let's go to the phones. Got Mike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Hi, Rick.
What's up, man?
Hey, I'm not surprised by Mr. Corbett. I'm kind of proud of him, frankly. I mean,
okay.
I want people like he's doing exactly what he said he was going to do. He's their guy. And all the fools that voted for him enjoy it. But I think that the interesting thing that's just gone on that's not getting a lot of coverage is what happened to the monarchs in England.
Did I miss something?
Well, it turns out that Prince whatever and Camilla apparently got the windows on their little rolls or whatever they ride around in smashed out by a mob, livid over the increases in tuition at the English university system.
Oh, well, you know, you'll have that.
And they were very bright.
As they should be. You know,
and I'm thinking, you know, that ought to happen to every CEO every day tries to drive anywhere.
I'm not going there with you, but I hear what you're saying.
Rick, it's going to kill us if we don't.
I hear what you're saying.
Pay attention. Look around. You know, that's why he's not hesitating, because they don't have to. This is 2 days raw time. They don't have to do anything for us. They can starve us out.
And they are doing that. I mean,
right.
this Highmark thing it just has me flipping livid. And
you know, if I was at the Highmark place, I mean, I don't know who they're going to get to do these spooks that are going to cruise around behind people and look over their shoulder. But if I had one of those jobs, I'd be wearing a threat level 3A vest all the time.
No, I mean.
By the way, that vest won't help you, though, when you got a bag over your head and you're going down a flight of stairs.
Mike, buddy, you're killing me here.
I mean, it is what it is. And I mean, I hate to say it, but that's where it's going to have to go. We're going to have to get in the streets, and we're going to end up shutting down traffic. And
I'm there with you on that.
Because they're going to kill us. They don't care. The next thing you're going to do is they're not going to give anybody their pension.
Well, we're already hearing the whispers of that. They're floating that idea out there because, look, the private sector has already lost their pensions.
But they don't have to.
Right. The majority of workers in this country have already gotten the shaft when they ram those 401ks down our throats.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, hey, they don't have to. Who do you go to get the government arrested? Who arrests the cops?
That's a good point.
Pay attention. If they just came tomorrow and said, we're not going to pay any of these pensions to anybody, what recourse does anybody really have? You want to take it into a judicial system, a court of law, that, oh, by the way, is run by the same elitist pukes who just did it to you? Well, they go to the same country club. They drink together. They party together. Why do you think they're going to do something for us?
Not likely. Not likely, Mike. And you're right. And we're hearing this talk. I don't think it's going to come to that. But I don't doubt that they would want to try.
But there's one thing that's really kind of ironic about this. You know one of the things they let China sell in America?
What's that?
Is that very inexpensive, high-quality assault rifles.
You're killing me, Mike.
Hey, it's free trade. It's free trade.
All right.
Half the gap.
Yeah, WTO. Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Hey.
And maybe we can make it standard option on those Korean cars that are only going to have 35% domestic content, right?
Hey, you know, you never know. You know, maybe they'll be cool. Maybe they'll have a gun mount on the hood. Who knows? You know, this is where it leads. I mean, look at history. I mean, this isn't new. I'm just reading history. Every time the elite is finally say, let's just kill all of them. Let's just starve them to death.
Which is why Buffett is out there saying, raise taxes on me, please. Not because he's some great guy, but because he's probably reading the same book you're reading, Mike.
Well, and you've heard what I've said about Roosevelt, FDR. Wasn't that FDR was a great humanitarian. His wife was. But he wasn't so much. But he was smart enough to go to his rich robber baron friends and say, you don't understand. Look what happened in Russia. They're going to hang us.
They're going to come for you with the pitchforks.
Yes. We're going to all be dead if you don't get behind it. That's the discussion.
Well, we're going to see how this plays out. I'm hoping you're wrong. I appreciate the call, buddy. Thank you so much.
All right.
You know... Again, you know, right to the pitchforks.
Well, more specific what Mike was talking about, that happened a couple of days ago. I thought I mentioned, maybe I didn't. If I didn't, I was about to. Yeah, what happened? The college students rioted. By all reports, Rick, they tripled the cost of college education over there. You know, hey, England, over in Ireland, all throughout Europe, these austerity programs, and who pays the price?
Yeah,
why should that surprise
they
you?
They tripled the fees, which were still probably, from what I understand, 100 times less than what we pay. And they're rioting against that, and good for them. We should have been doing that a generation ago.
Tripling is still tripling. I mean, and whether it was cheap or not is in the eye of the beholder. Here we're complaining that not enough Americans care and are protesting, and over there they... You know, just like the French farmers, when they tied up traffic in Paris. I mean, these students are letting the power structure know, look, we're not going to take this. And I tip my hat. I don't necessarily tip my hat to the violence. I don't want to see people hurt. But they're out there in the people. They're out there in the street protesting, and more Americans to do that. And we keep saying maybe that's what it takes, Rick. Maybe we need millions of Americans to go to the street and let our elected officials know.
I've been saying that's just the beginning of this collapse. I've been saying that from the start. The only way things change is when people get angry and people take to the streets.
And isn't that what Bernie Sanders is doing? He's going to the streets in a sense, and I'll tell you why. Bernie Sanders is all over. When you're talking about local news, half hour, an hour, Rick, Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders. The national news, ABC, NBC, CBS, Bernie Sanders, CNN, Bernie Sanders, MSNBC, Bernie Sanders. You can go watch him live. He's bringing attention in more detail than anyone has done as of now on this issue. And he's drawing more and more and more people's attention to look, America, look what's happening to your country. Pay attention and do something. So my hat, you know, as far as I'm concerned, God bless Bernie Sanders. He's a true American hero, as far as I'm concerned.
We've had him on the program a number of times. We're going to get him on as we speak. Here's the thing. We've known about Bernie Sanders because, truth be told, he was the very first person I interviewed on this program five and a half years ago. The very first interview I did, the very first show I did Labor Day of 2005 was with Bernie Sanders. He was one of those guys who... I used to spend a lot of time up in Vermont, and he was one of those inspirational people who I really believe has the ability to bring people together and to motivate.
And you know what? It's always bothered me a little bit. We like to pigeonhole people. We like to put people, name people, put a label on them. Call Bernie Sanders what you want. You can call, that was involuntary, Rick. You can call Bernie Sanders what you want, but isn't it ironic? This is what I found Bernie Sanders. On all the issues that are important to me and millions of Americans, he's on the right side. He's on the right side. Call him what you want. And a lot of people who don't like all that Bernie Sanders, he's just a left-wing wacko. He's this socialist. Well, you know what? He's out there on the right side fighting for what's right and fighting to make this country a better place to live for all of us. And, you know, the Congress of the United States needs more Bernie Sanders, not less, more.
I agree. I absolutely agree. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Okay, boys and girls, pull out your crayons and let's see if you can do a better job of coloring than the Department of Homeland Security. At long last, the obvious has dawned on our national security czars. Since March 12, 2002, back in the Bush-Cheney regime, the chief connection that we the masses have had to America's massive and secretive Homeland Protection Program has been five colors. Green, blue, yellow, orange, and red. That's been the full extent of our nation's terrorism alert system, which supposedly tells us how afraid to be at any given moment. Finally, though, top DHS officials have conceded what the rest of us have known for years. Their color-coded warning scheme is a kindergarten-level joke that communicates nothing and protects no one. Since 2006, the color has not changed. Orange. Every day, in every airport, the orange threat level is announced in a doomsday voice, every 5 minutes or so. It's useless information, so everyone tunes it out. Jay Leno has suggested that DHS should include plaid in its color scheme, for at least that would tell us that our country is under attack by Scotland. So DHS is giving up on its color code and is presently seeking a new public warning system that, quote, provides specific actionable information based on the latest intelligence. Intelligence? These are the people who miss clear clues about the 9/11 crash bombers, the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber, and others. So let's not count on their intelligence. This is Jim Hightower saying, how about a series of sounds that range from a ho-hum, not-to-worry sigh to a terrifying shriek of imminent doom? Or maybe just tell us when something bad is really about to happen. Perhaps shouting a blunt but useful message like, bend over and kiss your butt goodbye.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be just fabulous. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This week, House Republican leaders picked their committee chairs. They're all upset about Michigan Republican Representative Fred Upton being the head of the Energy and Commerce Committee. But, so sorry, Joe Barton, he lost out. Kentucky Representative Harold Prince of Pork Rogers, he's going to be taking over the Appropriations Committee. And so I guess you're going to get the Cuckoo Creationist amusement park built. More funding for that. Yay! Earmarks! Yay! Slacker Joe Pitts of Pennsylvania right here, our buddy. He's been named head of the Energy and Commerce Committee subcommittee on health issues, basically because he's one of these anti-abortion whack jobs. Spencer Baucus, representative from Alabama, was picked to head the Financial Services Committee. So I guess we won't be seeing any real oversight there. And, you look at all of these people just We're putting them in charge of things that they don't believe in. We're putting them in charge of overseeing things that they hate. And we're going to be surprised in 2 years when they've done worse than nothing, when their decisions cause irreparable harm to this nation. We're going to then be surprised. Oh, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. Did a heck of a job down there in New Orleans. Because we reward cronyism. We reward failure. Evidently, because we've rewarded the people who got us into this mess by putting them back into power. So congratulations, American voters. Look what we have done. And I look at Ohio, my home state. I got to be honest. Ohio has just gone cuckoo in my mind. Just completely off the deep end. Wisconsin, another state where you go, what are you thinking? You got this crazy governor. You got rid of Russ Feingold, who I think was a great senator. Both Ohio and Wisconsin right now, they've lost $1.2 billion with a B. $1.2 billion in federal stimulus money for rail projects that will now be going to California, Florida, and 11 other states. Ohio and Wisconsin, the New York Times reported, sought and won the stimulus money this year to build new rail lines to create jobs, ease traffic, and help the environment. But both states elected new Republican governors last month who vowed to kill the train projects, arguing that they were boondoggles, that they would make the states they'd have to be subsidized by the state. Now both states, which have been hit hard by the economic downturn, are losing the money. The Federal Department of Transportation announced Thursday that it was rescinding the $810 million it would have awarded to Wisconsin to build a train line from Milwaukee to Madison and the nearly $400 million that it had awarded to Ohio to build the train linking Cincinnati, Columbus, and Cleveland. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood said the money would be redistributed to 13 other states, with the biggest winners being California and Florida. Neither of the newly elected governors expressed any regret in losing the money or the construction jobs, which I find really kind of amazing. These are two states that have really been hit hard. I mean, really, they've been hit hard by this economic downturn, by this, and they're thrilled. Oh, Kasich on the night of the election.
Kasich, yeah.
The train is dead, he said, and he was happy, thrilled. And the minions, yay! They couldn't have been happier. They were standing around clapping and carrying on. You know, it's just silly.
Well, Rick, you mentioned California. Correct me if I'm wrong. California is building high-speed rail, I believe, from San Francisco to L.A., and by all reports, and I'm sure they got a lot of state aid, and are going to get more, not federal aid. They will create while it is being built about over 700,000 jobs, and here you have a state who is in debt. More than probably any other state, much more so than Ohio or Wisconsin, and they consider it an economic necessity. How do you square those two philosophies?
Well,
over 700,000 jobs and over 400,000 permanent jobs once the railroads are built.
I think right from the start, I think the premise would be completely, the Republicans would then, after you laid out your case, and a very good one, gold star for you, they would put their fingers in their ears, and And they would
lie. You hate America.
Yeah, that's right. They'd say you lie. You hate America because they don't want to. They don't want to talk about facts. They want to talk about what they believe. And facts be damned. And you look at here in Pennsylvania, for instance. I mean, Kasich and the guy at Walker there in Wisconsin. Gleeful that they've turned away the evil federal government and the evil rail project. You know, we are so far behind the rest of the industrialized world in moving people and products and things around. We have horrible transportation systems. You want to attract the businesses of the 21st century? Let's just talk pure capitalist mentality.
Yeah.
If you want to attract world-class businesses, you have to have world-class transportation. We have a rail infrastructure that is 100 years old. It's 100 years old. Do you really think the corporate structure of the 21st century is going to want to put their product on a 100-year-old rail line? No. So you invest in this stuff. You know, do you really want to put your business in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, if you've got to go to New York City 3 times a week and the only way to get there is to either drive your car or fly in an airplane, which are both hassles? When you could just get on the train and boom, you're there. It takes forever on the train that's there now. You've got the Amtrak that'll take you into New York. I think it's about $125 round trip, which is kind of expensive. Where if you had a high speed, high volume rail that was doing that trip more often, the price would come down and you'd have more ridership. And if it was quicker, you'd have more people doing it. Or into Philly or into Washington, D.C. We should have public transportation like they have in other countries. I would use it. You know, when I first moved to Carlisle, they were talking about Corridor 1. A great idea. Yeah, we're going to put a light rail that will run from downtown Carlisle that will run all the way here into Harrisburg.
And into Lancaster.
The original and then you would hook it up into other spurs. And
great
would,
idea in central Pennsylvania. Great
and
idea.
And you would connect it all together. No. Oh,
short-sightedness.
Not cost-effective.
What it came down to, as many times, and I don't want this to be a simplistic answer, but I got to say this. All too often, especially Republicans, they're more concerned about looking good.
Yep.
Looking good and keeping taxes down so we can get reelected. Meanwhile, you and I both know how horrendous 81 is. Not to mention what people... this is light rail. But when you're talking about railroads in general, it's an economic boon. And just as you said, if a business can save money by using rail as opposed to the present system, what does that mean? That means it'll save time. And in business, time is money. It means effectiveness. It means an effective system. But yet we downplay that. And then we wonder why we're getting our socks knocked off.
Yeah. Anyway, Representative Kerry Benninghoff from Bellefont had a piece in the Center Daily News. He says it's time to get state back on track. He says tough times are ahead and we need to get to work. First of all, he says almost one of every 10 Pennsylvanians who want to work cannot find a job. Chances are if you're not that one person, you know someone who is. Second, the state is facing a multi-billion-dollar deficit next year if expenses are not reined in, he says. State government is on pace to spend dollars faster than Pennsylvania taxpayers can send them to Harrisburg. And finally, he says the real problem, the public lacks faith in state government to solve the problems. Constituents have grown weary due to excessively late budgets, backroom deals, and the general culture that permeates Harrisburg. Well, now that you Republicans are in charge, you'll be able to change all that, right? And here's what he says. There are some realistic and common sense solutions to our problems. So what do you think his common sense solutions are? We need to lower taxes. Yes, that's the answer. That's the answer to our massive budget deficits. We need to lower taxes. We need to take in less revenue. That's really going to help our budget deficits. Then he says we need to reduce the size and the cost of the General Assembly. And I don't know that I agree with that. I don't know that it's going to save all that much money, and I think it's having a smaller, more easily corruptible General Assembly. I don't know that that's a good idea. He calls for the fire sale of the state liquor stores. And he wants to combine the Department of Transportation and the Turnpike Commission. Personally, I'm surprised he didn't come out and say he wanted to sell the Turnpike too. I'm sure that's on his second op-ed that they put together for him. But I look at this stuff, and it's the same, the same, the same. They just dusted off the playbook that failed the last time, and they said, see, we got new ideas. We're calling them by different names. But it's the same failed idea. Same dumb ideas. We've got budget deficits, so what we need to do is take in less money. Where's the logic in that? I go back to the kitchen table economics idea. Since they love to throw it out, you know, when you're at your kitchen table. Well, when I go to my kitchen table and I've got bills, and I say, well, gee, you know, I've got all these bills. What's the best way to pay them off? Oh, I should work less so I have less revenue. That'll do it, yeah. I should bring in less money to the house. Yeah. Does that work? Because it hasn't so far. During the Reagan years, they told us if we cut taxes, it'll raise revenue. And everyone said, oh, yeah, it did. No, it didn't. But you got the people, the blind faith people. Yes, it did. Oh, yes, it did. No, it didn't. It defies logic. And this idea that we're going to have this fire sale for the state stores, to me, is just plain dumb. There are a whole bunch of reasons why you leave the state store system right the way it is. It is fine the way it is. When I need a bottle of wine, or when I went to the Christmas party the other day and got a bottle of scotch, I went to the store and there it was. The guy was very helpful. He didn't check my ID. I could have been under 18.
Well, I could see how they confuse you from a teenager, Rick.
Yeah, all that gray hair helps.
I wasn't referring to the gray hair.
Don't even go. But no, I mean, the guy rang up my sale, and you know, every penny of that goes to the state. The taxes were paid the way they're supposed to, and you know that guy who rang me up? He can support his family making a decent living. We sell off these stores. That guy loses his job. He ends up on the backs of the taxpayer. Because he's going to collect unemployment. Because we're not going to create jobs with selling these stores off. It's not going to happen. Liquor will then just become another item on a shelf, an impulse item, if you will, right there on the shelf next to the Tic Tacs. It's not going to create jobs. And what it's going to do is it's going to create an environment where we're pushing more alcohol, where we're pushing it. And I don't know, as a society, that I want to encourage that. If you want to drink and you want to be responsible, I'm all, go do what you got to do. I mean, I enjoy a cocktail every now and again. But making it an impulse item, failed policy across the board. Too many social ills, too many problems. Let's take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7422.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, hungryandhomeless.org, that's our food drive website. We want folks to go over there and donate a couple of bucks to Project Share and Carlisle Cares. It is all tax deductible. Also, we will see you the 18th of December through the 24th as we camp out there at 255 South Spring Garden Street in Carlisle at the Giant Food Store. We'll be the ones living under the ABF trailer. I want to thank our friends at ABF for providing us a trailer. At this point, I believe that to be the case, so that's a good thing. Come out on the 23rd between 3 and 7 and donate blood. The people at the Central PA Blood Bank will be giving $2 for each person who sits there, their little behind in the seat, to be stuck with the needle.
Are you going to volunteer, Rick?
Yeah, I do. I don't give blood as much as I used to or as much as I should, but I do believe in it, and I think it's a good thing.
So you're not one of these guys when you see blood, you faint?
No. In fact, I have this morbid kind of quirk that I have to watch. I hate needles. Hate needles with a passion, but I can't not watch, which is kind of sick.
Well, actually, I've known some big, strong guys who faint at the sight of blood. I've seen it happen.
No, I don't have a problem seeing blood, especially if it's not mine. Anyway, you wanted to make a comment about these state stores. You had an epiphany. You found a nut.
I was cut off by our board op mercilessly, but seriously, I don't think the union at United Food and Commercial Workers sometimes gets enough of a chance to tout their employees. I mean, they're well trained. When you go in there and you ask them any question about what kind of wine you have, what kind of drinks you have, they're well versed. They are absolutely not going to sell anyone alcoholic beverages that isn't old enough, which I think is not going to happen if you privatize it. And key, they make decent money. And oh yeah, that's right. When they make decent money, they then plow that money, some of them taxes, back into the state, which I think we're underestimating. Plus, this year, I understand, Rick, They're projecting over $400 million will go into the coffers from sales from liquor in this state. And we're going to lose that. And if anything, if it's $400 million plus this year, I think common sense would project that in the future it will increase. So we're talking maximum five years or less, that we're going to make up that estimated value of $2 billion if we sell them. And that will be no more. And after that, the taxpayers lose and lose big and honest. And I know you're
not getting $2
billion. You have always said you don't think they're going to get $2 billion. I'm talking about the best scenario. So it could be 3 years and 4 years. And after that, anyway, at the end of the day, they privatize it in many ways. The taxpayers of this state are going to take it on the chin. You can bet on that.
Yeah, and the other thing I think we're going to, and you brought up the fact about the employees who are reasonably paid union workers who, you know, look, very competent, very qualified. I went in there the other day to make a purchase, very helpful. I had a very positive experience. there are folks who want to destroy that. They based just on the fact that they're organized workers. And I look at this guy in Ohio, and again, I think Ohio has completely lost its ever-loving freaking mind. John Kasich quickly showed his contempt for workers' rights at a recent press conference, angered that police officers and firefighters have the ability to call a neutral arbitrator to resolve any labor disputes. Kasich told the Youngstown Vindicator that he would love to eliminate binding arbitration and would like to fire any police officer or firefighter who wants to strike. As I've been saying for the longest time, we need labor law reform in the worst way because of people like this. Kasich said, "You think these local governments want to be stuck with binding arbitration?" He says, "I'm serious. Our local governments don't want that. Drives up costs," he said. "So we're looking for ways to mitigate any of the reductions in dollars that people get. You know, how to make it easier for them to be able to cope with it." So the guy asked the question. He says, on that last point, wasn't binding arbitration adopted as a way to eliminate the possibility of public workers striking? And he said, yeah. It was, but if they want to strike, they should be fired, he said. You should not allow them to look, he says. We should have to change the law. You're not going to strike, and we're going to continue negotiating without a binding arbitrator. And the guy who's asking the question goes, let me just make this clear. You don't think police and fire emergency services should have the right to strike? And he said, I'm not in favor of any public worker having the right to strike. He says, that's my personal philosophy. He says, I mean, they've got good jobs, high pay, good benefits, great retirement. What are they striking for? And I look at that statement, and it shows, A, how ignorant he is. Because the reason they've got decent pay, the reason they've got decent benefits, the reason that they've got decent jobs is because they did collective bargaining. They came together and they said, we want some of the better things. What's interesting to me is John Kasich. Remember, this is the guy that ran on the fact that his father was a union member, ran on the fact that his father was a postal worker. And what I find absolutely amazing is it's people like Kasich, the very people like John Kasich, who want to privatize and destroy the postal service. I mean, I've talked about people like him in the past that I've known growing up, that their parents were able to provide for them because they had a reasonable wage, because they had a decent job working in a union plant. Like my grandmother, she was a UFCW member working in a small department store, making a good wage. Back in 1980, making $8 an hour. Half the Walmart people don't make $8 an hour today, 30 years later. And, you know, in this whole little interview he did, there are a lot of things that he wants you not to think about. The right to strike is an absolute last option. Nobody wants that. That's a failure of both sides to negotiate. Nobody wants to be on strike, but it's a last option. It's sometimes the only thing that restarts negotiations. I mean, sometimes it's the only way to address the problem. And what I found interesting about his comments is in Ohio, I don't know if you know this or not, but in Ohio, it's against the law for the firemen or the policemen to strike. They're not allowed to. They gave that away because Ohio passed the collective bargaining law in 83 that prohibits them from doing it. So when the state took that right to strike away from them, they replaced it with binding arbitration. And what I find interesting about Kasich and his ilk, really, the Briettes over here at the Tinky Tank and all of the right wingers is they seem to think that this binding arbitration is the worker's best friend. I'm sorry, it's not. Binding arbitration is a failure of both sides to come to a mutual agreement. But what binding arbitration says is there will be a contract. There will be labor harmony. There will be something in place to make sure people go to work. And employers have the right to do their jobs. What I find funny, though, is these folks, they don't bother to think that way. All they see is that that working person has a choice. And you look at the folks at Highmark. Do you think they have a choice to have someone following them all day long? Do you think the people at Highmark enjoy being harassed, constantly spied on? I'm telling you, that's a hostile work environment. And I don't know how many of you out there have this happen, where they're looking over your shoulder every 10 seconds to see how they can outsource you because you don't have a voice. You don't have anything to protect you. To me, that's what a contract's about. I've never found a CEO yet, and I've looked. I've yet to find a CEO who hasn't had a contract, who hasn't laid out the conditions under which they will toil, how much they're going to get paid, and what benefits they're going to get out of it. In fact, I would love to have their contracts. You look at the folks at Ford right now and GM. GM right now is ready to go to the president and say, oh, you know what? We need our people to have raises. Reuters reported today, General Motors will seek some relaxation from the executive pay restrictions imposed by the U.S. government as a condition of the $50 billion in financing. The automaker's chief executive, Dan Akerson, told the Washington Economic Club that he would meet with the Obama administration's acting special paymaster on late Friday to discuss the matter. Akerson said, we have to be competitive. We have to attract and retain great people. We've been able to do that, but we're starting to lose them. They don't care about the working stiffs. They don't care about the people who are working on the line. They don't care about those folks. They care about the executives. They care about the big pay people because they've got big contracts. And what's funny about Kasich, in addition to scuttling the rail project that cost them, they're saying about 80,000 jobs, you know, he drove that away. He's going to cost the state another $400 million in federal education funds. And to top it off, he's going to try and eliminate Ohio's income tax, nearly half of the state's revenue, about $8.3 billion next year alone. And then you add another nearly $300 million for his apparent plans to eliminate the estate tax in Ohio. And it looks like Kasich is going to more than double the deficit in Ohio. And, you know, we go, why would he do that? Why would he possibly do that? Well, you know, I think we've said it before a number of times. It comes back to Grover Norquist. It comes back to drown the beast. It comes down to, you know, starve him, drag him into the bathtub, and drown him. And that's what he's doing. But what I find interesting, you listen to this guy talk, and most conservatives, it's always the union's fault. It's always the union's fault. And here in Pennsylvania, it's no different. We're hearing all these kooks going after teachers and public workers. I listened to some TV thing the other day with this guy, Chris Friend, one of these anti-education guys. Saying, oh, well, you know, the teachers union, they're striking. Is that right? The kids don't miss a second of school. Yeah, it's disruptive a little bit. But at the end of the day, that's the last arrow in the quiver. That's the last straw. That shows that the school district has failed as well. It's not one-sided. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Save the USA, it's drowning in craft and lies. Save the USA, and resume those ties and mine. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job, join the group.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
If you're injured at work, do you think you need an attorney? You probably don't. To protect yourself, you do need to know your rights. retain control. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 954722. Don't be taken advantage of. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. According to Pittsburgh's WTAE Team 4 investigation, they say corporations set up paper subsidiaries in Delaware to avoid paying state taxes here in Pennsylvania, in part because of a loophole. 3 out of every 4 corporations in Pennsylvania pay no corporate income tax. But they report that many small companies are still stuck paying the full freight. So they cut to Delaware, where they show these nice key-cutter office buildings where numerous companies have a P.O. box to launder their profits through. And in one building that they showed, you saw PP&G, you saw PNC Bank, you saw UPMC, the medical center out there in Pittsburgh, and of course, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Yes, that's right. Even the Pittsburgh Pirates have a P.O. box to launder their profits through. And, you know, I thought we built them a stadium, didn't we? But their company is called Pittsburgh Pirates Player Development Incorporated. They're in Delaware. And when I did a little checking, the state taxpayers picked up about $75 million for PNC Park there in Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh taxpayers paid about $137 million. So I find it really, really, really odd that we build them a stadium. And in return, their gratitude is to say, we're going to take our profits to Delaware. Think about that for a second. And yet, we've got a governor. Never, ever, he said, not gonna close the loophole. Because that would be raising taxes, I guess.
Yeah, but it gets better. A lot of these owners, baseball teams say, well, we don't make any money.
So then why are you setting up
these? Well, now wait a minute, but they write it off. So it's a win-win-win for them. They get the stadiums paid. They get to avoid some taxes. When they do make money in other years, they say, well, we don't make money, therefore we're going to write it off. So it's a win-win-win. I mean, these guys.
But we let them do it. This is the thing that gets me. We let them do it.
If they make money, they hide it. If they don't make money, they write it off.
We need to be more business-friendly. How much more business-friendly can we be?
Oh, and you can have
75% of the companies pay no taxes.
You can have a bad team like the Pittsburgh Pirates, and they've probably been the worst team in baseball in the last 10 years. But I guarantee you that owner, from the time he bought it to the time he sells it, will make a huge profit.
what I found out is when they built that new baseball field, and I've seen it, it's a beautiful park. They have yet to have one winning season since they built that park. And, you know, we spent all that money, a lot of taxpayer dollars went into it. And they're laundering their profits out of the state. And to me, there's a sense of fairness there. And I guess maybe it's just my, you know, warped Catholic upbringing that makes me think that fair is fair. If I'm going to have a business in Pennsylvania, if I reap the rewards of the infrastructure that's here, I should have to pay something, right? Especially if they built my place of employment. I mean, that's what gets me. We helped build the stadium, paid a big chunk of it, and they're laundering the money out of state. That's, oh man.
I mean, they did this. They helped the Phillies. They helped the Eagles. They helped the Steelers. We can go into that whole argument and a whole raft of issues where it's questionable about what was done.
But you keep going back to hearing the Toomeys and the Corbetts and all the Republicans screaming, Pennsylvania has the highest corporate tax rate. If nobody pays it, do you really have the highest corporate tax rate? And the answer is no, because nobody's paying it. Three quarters of the people are cheating. If you or I tried to launder our money out of the state, we'd get arrested. We'd be sitting right next to Wesley Snipes, which is kind of funny. Wesley Snipes, he goes to jail for tax evasion, but yet some of these, Dick Cheney, Halliburton will pay his little pittance, $500 million to Nigeria to keep him out of jail. Just tells you, you know, there are different classes in this country, and we love to say, oh, we're a classless society. Yeah. You keep telling yourself that. Keep telling yourself that. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Today I had an opportunity to see an old friend of mine, somebody that I haven't seen in a couple of years. We go back, and I was sitting there thinking, I'm like, oh, man, we've been friends for 30 years. Ever since I didn't get to beat him up in eighth grade. And, you know, I...
Maybe I'll explain that.
Well, you know, I went through a very angry stage as a young man. Right after my mother died, I moved in with my grandparents, and I moved to a very white neighborhood. A very white neighborhood. Full of smart-mouthed kids who couldn't fight. So every male in the eighth grade, I beat up by the end of September. So it came my friend's turn, and you know we met on the little landing where he was going to get his whipping, and you know he stood up to me, which I respected, and then a teacher came and broke it up before we got into it, and we've been friends ever since. It was one of those finally I found somebody I could respect. And years later, he told me I was scared to death. He goes, I knew I was going to take a beating, but I wasn't going to back down. And we've been friends all these years. And he has done really, really well for himself. So it was nice. It was nice to see him today. And, you know, he's just doing really well.
And, of course, it should be explained to our listeners that you were just trying to make a citizen out of all those other kids.
That's
you
right.
Smart mouth, and you were trying to teach them manners.
Yeah. It is what it is. But the whole Delaware loophole thing comes about because I went to Delaware to see my buddy, because that's where he lives. And that's why it popped into my head. And I see these buildings. And we had this discussion about the taxes there and how there are no corporate taxes and how you do see a lot of Pennsylvania business presence there. They don't do anything there, but they've got a presence there.
It's a tax haven for that reason.
Because they can launder profits through there. And at some point, don't you think we have to stop that? I mean, as my property taxes go up, as our usury fees go up, don't you think you need to put a stop to that? But Tom Corbett's not going to do it. And he's not going to raise a severance tax on the Marcellus Shale. Bad stuff, in my opinion. We're right back after this.
Grab that cash in both hands. Future Smart Policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The United Steelworkers Union opposes passage of the Korean Free Trade Agreement. The USW says the agreement falls far short of what is necessary to ensure that U.S. workers and businesses have a fair deal. The union says important improvements were made in the agreement over the terms agreed to by the Bush administration, but after a careful examination of the terms, the steelworkers have decided to oppose the trade deal. The union has been deeply involved in discussions and consultations with the Obama administration over this agreement, providing specific proposals to improve it. The USW says auto sector provisions are very important to its members, but auto industry terms in this agreement fall far short of what the union feels are the minimum changes necessary to get USW support. The steelworkers say this agreement allows another flood of products shipped from China and other countries through Korea to allow them to benefit from this free trade agreement. At the same time, the union says it doesn't sufficiently open the South Korean market to U.S. goods. The USW says the decision to oppose the Korean trade agreement wasn't easy because the Obama administration has made effective implementation and enforcement of trade laws a priority, helping to advance the interests of USW workers in the steel, tire, and green technology sectors. More jobs for the U.S. auto industry were announced on Thursday. Jesse Russell has more.
Ford Motor Company announced $600 million would be invested in reformatting an assembly plant in Louisville, Kentucky. The company will use the plant to produce small sport utility vehicles, the Escape. The plant was previously used to produce trucks for Ford, but that work will now be shifted to the Chicago region. Currently, the company employs 1,100 workers at the plant, but when it begins production on the Escape in late 2011, it will need 2,900 workers. The 1,800 new jobs will be filled with auto workers who had previously been laid off in the region, and if that doesn't fill enough of the work, they'll be transferred in from other shuttered facilities. The company also expects to hire new workers for the plant. That's good news for the region, which had a 9.4% unemployment rate in October. Part of the reason Ford is willing to further invest in the plant is because Kentucky offered incentives to the tune of $240 million over 10 years.
UAW activists are joining with clergy and farmworker activists to picket 100 Chase Bank branches across the country today. The International Human Rights Day protest urges Chase to adopt a one-year moratorium on home foreclosures. Protesters also want Chase to use its influence as the lead banker for R.J. Reynolds to facilitate talks to improve living and working conditions for the farm workers who work the tobacco fields. UAW President Bob King says he's seen the squalid conditions tobacco farm workers endure, and he says Chase Bank has an opportunity and a social responsibility to bring R.J. Reynolds to the table to stop this human exploitation. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I am the God of Hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012. The Rick Smith Show.
Yes, our good man there. Tricky Ricky Santorum. Evidently, he's going to be testing the presidential waters, according to the Washington Post. He's making a couple of trips to New Hampshire, to Iowa, over to South Carolina. He's been, just kind of feeling things out. They report that the conservative Republican has been there several times since April in New Hampshire, a couple of trips to both, Iowa and South Carolina. Santorum told the Post, "I'm feeling that doors are opening. Things are happening that may be give me the impression that I might look at this seriously." Since being defeated in his reelection bid in 2006, Tricky Ricky has been a contributor over at Fake News on Fox and is a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Such a nice sounding name.
He was considered a national security advisor on Fake News.
Yeah. And I remember his national security vote for me moment. Well, here it is. And I love this. It's beautiful.
All of you tonight,
is not to put on a uniform, put on a bumper sticker.
All he wanted people to do was put on a bumper sticker on their car. Didn't want them to join the military or anything. Just put a Santorum bumper sticker on your car. Yeah. Santorum told the Post that he will not make any decisions on launching a run for the presidency until the spring of 2011. However, according to the Post, Santorum's Political Action Committee has raised $1.4 million in this year already. So, you know, look, there are a lot of people who've got their eyes wide open because they think the president's going to be weak. There are a lot of people who think that they're going to have a shot, like this twit, quitter Governor Sarah Palin. Politico reported that the quitter Alaska former governor is planning a foreign policy trip sometime next year, providing an opportunity to boost her presidential prospects. Look, if you think the world hates us now, wait till Little Miss Don't You Know comes to town. Details of the trip, including the timing, have yet to be worked out, but Palin's sources confirm that plans are being considered on foreign travel in the new year, looking at Israel, looking at Britain, because she wants to meet Margaret Thatcher, don't you know? She wants to meet with the former UK president and prime minister, Margaret Thatcher, don't you know? Remember in 2009 when she went to Hong Kong to the economic conference and all she could do was stick the knife in Obama's back? Yeah, I'm assuming more of the same. But before Caribou Barbie, or as Andrew Sorkin calls her, a deranged, witless bully and a phony pioneer girl, our opportunist queen is planning to travel to Haiti with evangelical nitwit Franklin Graham to have her picture taken with some sick people. And, you know, have that look on her face like she actually cares, you know. I actually care, don't you know? Politico reports the trip will give her a potential presidential candidate a chance to expand her image and her policy portfolio beyond being the darling of the T-Twit movement. And, you know, I, again, like I said, if you think they hate us now, wait till Little Miss Don't You Know. Oh, hey, don't you know?
I mean, the dream team for, you know, the worst president and vice president, you'd have to think long and hard to come up with somebody worse than Palin and Santorum. Remember Santorum when he was running against Casey in 06? I remember it came down the last couple of weeks, and it was like a Hail Mary pass for Santorum when he actually made a speech saying that for the security of the United States, and he did say this, for the security of the United States, you must vote for me.
I'm the only one who can keep
he was down, the irony is, if I remember, he's down by about 10 at that time, and he thought, well, you know, he needs a Hail Mary pass, because guess what? It was like he smacked the people Pennsylvania side of the head. He lost by 17 points. And if you would have told me that about 6 weeks or a month out, I would have said you're nuts. It was fairly close. It was within 5 points for a long, long time. But
then he did the dumb thing.
Oh, well, yeah, but you know what? The last year he was in, if you remember 05, if you remember his big push to privatize, I mean, he absolutely politically just got killed. Everywhere he went, he had opposition. It didn't go over well. Not too bright politically in a state with the second most senior citizens. You're proposing to privatize a system that is taking care of many, many of the citizens in Pennsylvania. As far as I'm concerned, not too bright if you have aspirations.
Yeah. And our favorite Caribou Barbie there, she'll be going just in time to Haiti to tout our 12th rated status. So, you know, hooray, you know, we're number 12. Sam Pia Zagata, editor of Too Much, points out that back in early November, our inequality has cost us a bit. The United States holds far more wealth than any nation in the world, yet people in 11 other countries, according to a new UN research poll, are enjoying a higher standard of living. And you go down the list, and it's, you know, Norway, Australia, Sweden, the Netherlands, Germany, Switzerland, Ireland, Canada, Iceland, Denmark, Finland, all have higher standards of living than we have. And what goes on is, you know, they're looking at the entire thing, health, education, income, opportunity, mobility, all of those things that we think we're number one at, we're actually number 12 at. And, you know, it's one of those things that I've got friends that love to, you know, they love to puff out their chest and tell me how wonderful the country is, how exceptional we are in these fields. And I said, well, you can say that, and I love to go along with you. I love to take that magical mystery ride, but it's just not true. You know, I love a good fantasy too. You know, I love a good, you know,
magical mystery tour, perhaps.
Yeah, I love
take off on the Beatles. Maybe that's who they were talking about.
Could be. I'm kind of happy to fantasize too. You know, maybe someday Michelle Bachman and I will get together. You never know.
You keep dreaming that, Rick. I'll tell you
maybe
what.
Maybe my wife will
I'll
let
tell you
me.
What. Why don't you sit by the phone, and when she gives me a call that she wants to meet you, you'll be the first to know. How's that?
No, but at the end of the day, you know, look, there's some realities that you have to face. We have a system that is quite broken. And for me, it comes down to the tax code. And I had a long discussion with one of the interns here today about the use of the tax code. And I'm a firm believer that you can shape public policy by using the tax code to encourage certain behaviors and discourage others. Like, I am a big proponent of putting a couple of cent tax on soda.
And the conservatives decry that. They bitterly oppose that.
And the reason is
social engineering.
And like today, it was the first time I had fast food in a couple of weeks, and you know, I was kind of like feeling sick over it, because you know, my body had gotten kind of used to not having it. So today, you know, I was in a situation where I was hungry, and that was it.
So you didn't have a double whopper?
No, I just had a regular
hamburger.
Yeah, with the nasty French fries and the soda. So that kind of, you know, just kind of blew the whole thing out. But I do believe there should be a tax on that, because as I was explaining to him, look, we know that's going to kill us. We know it's full of cholesterol and salt, and if you eat enough of it, it's going to cause health problems.
Childhood obesity, we wonder why.
Obesity in general. But, you know, and I said, you know, you take that money and you put it into a fund to take care of the people for when it happens, because it's going to happen. Same thing with smoking. I'm a firm believer in having a higher tax on cigarettes, because if you use cigarettes the way they're supposed to be used, they will kill you. I mean, that's the point. So when I hear these idiots saying, well, you know, we're Americans against food taxes, because they don't want any tax on the sugary crap that we feed our kids. Personally, I'm saying we should have a little bit of a tax into that to pay for the negative effects to society, the ADHD, the hyperactivity, the kids that are on the drugs, you know, all of that stuff.
But they frame it, if you listen to those commercials, I know the ones exactly, they've been around this area for the last couple months. When you listen to them, they're pretty slick, because what they do, they try to tell you, well, no one should tell you as a parent what your children should eat.
I'm not telling you what your children should eat.
But that's their take, and at the end of the day, that's the problem. A lot of parents don't.
But that's what I was going through with the intern, and he's going, look, well, you're telling the government saying what I can eat and what I can't. I said, no, they're not. You're just going to pay a couple of pennies more. And look, if you put a 15% tax on McDonald's, let's just say 15%, I'm not going to – when I was eating McDonald's all the time, that wouldn't have stopped
me. Well, there are some good food. I have to defend McDonald's a little bit. There are some of their foods that are fairly healthy.
Name one.
Their salad.
The 800-calorie salad?
No, wait a minute. No, wait a minute, Rick. It depends what you put on that salad.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Just like any other salad, but they do sell salads, and I've had them.
There you go again.
And they're not bad. Now, I would agree with you that the fries and the burgers and so you're saying that a salad.
But through the policy of saying, look, you know, on the greasy foods, on the other stuff, on all of the soda, you have a rational tax on that, because you're going to pay for the health effects of it. And we had the discussion, and at the end of it, he goes, well, maybe, yeah. Because I do believe that you can use the tax code in order to encourage certain behaviors and discourage others. Simple stuff. Anyway, what do you think? Can we? Are you against taxing the sugary sodas that, I got to be honest with you, I stopped drinking sodas for a couple of weeks, and I dropped like 20 pounds just in almost overnight. It was quick. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Okay, boys and girls, pull out your crayons and let's see if you can do a better job of coloring than the Department of Homeland Security. At long last, the obvious has dawned on our national security czars. Since March 12, 2002, back in the Bush-Cheney regime, the chief connection that we the masses have had to America's massive and secretive Homeland Protection Program has been five colors: green, blue, yellow, orange, and red. That's been the full extent of our nation's terrorism alert system, which supposedly tells us how afraid to be at any given moment. Finally, though, top DHS officials have conceded what the rest of us have known for years. Their color-coded warning scheme is a kindergarten-level joke that communicates nothing and protects no one. Since 2006, the color has not changed. Orange. Every day, in every airport, the orange threat level is announced in a doomsday voice, every 5 minutes or so. It's useless information, so everyone tunes it out. Jay Leno has suggested that DHS should include plaid in its color scheme, for at least that would tell us that our country is under attack by Scotland. So DHS is giving up on its color code and is presently seeking a new public warning system that, quote, provides specific actionable information based on latest intelligence. Intelligence? These are the people who miss clear clues about the 9/11 crash bombers, the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber, and others. So let's not count on their intelligence. This is Jim Hightower saying, how about a series of sounds that range from a ho-hum, not-to-worry sigh to a terrifying shriek of imminent doom? Or maybe just tell us when something bad is really about to happen. Perhaps shouting a blunt but useful message like, bend over and kiss your butt goodbye. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. P.J. Crowley, Assistant Secretary of State, in a daily press briefing back last week, said Mr. Assange obviously has a particular political objective behind his activities, and I think that, among other things, that disqualifies him from being considered a journalist. And when I heard, and I like P.J. Crowley, we've had him on the program a couple of times, I think he's a decent guy, but to say that the WikiLeaks guy is not a journalist because he has a political agenda, and I'm not quite sure that he does have a political agenda, but to say that he does and that disqualifies him, I got to look at fake news over on Fox and wonder if that applies to them and their folks there as well, because they obviously have a political agenda.
Apparently it doesn't apply to them.
You know what bothers me about this whole WikiLeaks thing is now you've got Putin. the boss for life over there in Russia, lecturing us about free speech, lecturing us about the freedom of the press. And, you know, this is one of those things that, just makes you go, really? We're going to get lectured from Putin? And you know what? We deserve it. I think we do. I think we absolutely deserve this because I think we're wrong. All of the things that have come down on this organization, the PayPal and the Visa and the MasterCard and all these people stripping them of money, I got a problem with that. I got a major problem with it.
It's an attack on the First Amendment. I mean, let's be honest. Some of the things may border on quasi-illegal, but the fact that he's getting information that probably should have been transparent in the first place is a positive thing.
And you know what I find interesting? Is you've got Russia, who was considered one of the most dangerous countries in the world for media types, for journalists, because they had, back in 2009, they had 9 journalists that were killed there. They're lecturing us. And to be honest, I gotta be honest, I'm surprised this guy's still alive.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, I think one of the reformers has said he should be given the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, one of the Russians.
Yes, one of the Russian reformers, yes.
They didn't say who he was. They just said, you know, an anonymous figure. So a reformer from
within the Soviet Union, who's running and probably run into the same problems that, you know, in the Soviet society as our buddy WikiLeaks. So what do you think's going to happen out of that trial?
Well, one of the women that have accused him of what he's been accused of, having sex without a condom, has fled to the Middle East. She's trying to get away from it.
And supposedly, this only happened after somehow they talked to each other. The news reports are coming out. There's some things that just don't quite add up here. You know, there's the invisible hand. I mean, we're making light of it, but you can bet that there were some people in the background saying, hey, you know, this might be a way we can get this guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, but here's the thing. I mean, these cables, to me, I think this is important stuff. And now, you know, the Russians are saying, well, it's not going to affect our approach to the U.S. It's not going to affect us. You know, some of the stuff that were in these cables, you know, said Russia's a mafia state. They said the president of the country is Robin to Putin's Batman. There's a lot of embarrassing stuff. But at the end of the day, I don't think you lock the guy up.
No.
And I'm with Ron Paul on this. I think the guy is. We should have had more people like WikiLeaks guy. I think we need more transparency, not less. I think we need more accountability, not less.
What surprised me there on fake news, there's a Democratic strategist that normally
Dick Morris.
No. Dick Morrison's a little weasel twerp who's making a lot of money, you know, on Fox News selling his stupid books. But this guy, I forget the man's name. He's kind of chunky, a fairly big man. He's calling for the execution. I mean, he sounds like the ex-governor of Arkansas, Huckabee. And he's a liberal. I don't quite understand why they would be calling for his execution. You're going to have to explain that. Could I understand if he said, look, this guy violated the law, he should be brought to trial? Okay. Maybe he's guilty, maybe he's not. I happen to believe probably he's not. But to execute him? I mean, what did he do that deserves execution?
Well, he put something out that they didn't want him to put out. They probably told him not to. And he is the person that they're going to make a symbol out of. So, and what they're actually doing is they're making a martyr out of him. And that hasn't worked. I don't think that's ever really worked. But that's what they're trying to do. They're really making this guy out to be a martyr.
Where was Mr. I'm a Christian. I want to run for President Huckabee. When they outed Valerie Flame, and we talked, Flame, yeah, And we talked about this before. You know, she was doing her job, and she interacted with all kinds of people who were informants. Don't you believe by outing her that you put people in serious jeopardy? And it wouldn't surprise me to learn somewhere down the road that people died because of that. Where's the outrage of outing any agent like that?
Well, and the
putting
point with
people's
her,
lives in jeopardy.
The interesting point with her is she was actually working with terrorists to try and track weapons of mass destruction. I mean, that was the really weird part of all that. At a time when they were trying to fear us to death, and they were saying, "Oh, Al Qaeda's got, you know, these bombs, and all these people could have nuclear material." This woman was actually trying to track this stuff. That was her job.
And she wasn't outed because she turned on us and became a double agent.
Because of her husband.
She was outed because her husband did something. It was political.
Well, you know what her husband did.
Yes, I do. He wrote an expose which appeared all over the country, condemning the Bush administration in their policy concerning the Iraq war. Yes, I understand perfectly.
No,
was the outrage?
He refuted their key piece to get us into that war, which was the yellow
cake
uranium.
Call it what you want. Refute or condemned, whatever. Yeah, I understand exactly what he did. Where's the outrage? Where was the outrage then?
I think we were too afraid to be
outraged. Oh, and by the way, there's a little thing of the Bush administration bringing us into a war under false pretenses. What about that little thing? You know, that kind of insignificant.
Oh, you're living in the past.
You know, that insignificant thing that cost us tens of thousands of lives and, a little change, between ultimately $3 and $4 trillion, the estimates, if you factor in the total cost of taking care of the troops that were maimed, that were hurt, that have long-term psychological and physical injuries. What about that little escapade? Where has anybody been brought to justice in that one? That's not even getting into that little incestuous relationship with Halliburton and the vice president. Whatever came out of that, whatever came out of those millions of dollars that literally just disappeared.
See, you're living in the past. All that stuff's in the past. See, you're blaming Bush for everything.
I'm just asking questions.
And I'm right there with you.
Compared to all of that, why are they calling for this? But the point is, why are they calling for this guy to be executed?
Bank of America. All the information that he's got there. Yeah, I mean, you look at all the money that we've wasted on the wars. You look at all the money that we've wasted on tax handouts for the very wealthy. You look at all the squandered resources of the Bush administration. And you go, really? You're going to go after Obama? Who's trying to clean the mess up? I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And like you said, when you were talking to Congressman Sestak tonight, had we not had those wars, had we not squandered all of that money handed out to the Bush cronies, this economy would probably be okay. Had
a
we
deficit
not
gone, would be very reasonable.
Had we not gone and deregulated the financial services market, we probably wouldn't have lost all the wealth that we'd accumulated.
But as you said, what we really need to be concerned about is our trade deficit.
Absolutely. And here we are again going after another insane free trade agreement that does not protect American workers, that does not protect South Korean workers, but protects Wall Street, protects the investor class. And that's what they're supposed to do. That's what those agreements are supposed to do. You and I, we get capitalism. They get taken care of.
They get socialism.
My wife sent me this thing today, or it was yesterday. It was the Parade magazine. I don't know if you saw this. And I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. There are these, you know how you go to like the store and you see like a cutout of President Obama or President Bush or something. It's a life-size cutout.
Cardboard.
Yeah. Evidently, they have this thing. It's called Flat Daddy. And what they do is they take a picture of, like, one of the soldiers who are in Afghanistan or Iraq or somewhere, and they make one of those tall things, one of these cardboard cutouts. And the idea is for $50, you can buy one. And my wife talked me into buying two of them to donate. I think it's kind of creepy. But my wife was all, you know, she's all bent on this. So I'm trying to get somebody's opinion on this. Is it creepy that, you know, when the soldiers deployed that there is a cardboard cutout in the home for the kids to interact with? Do you think it's a great idea? She thought it's just the greatest idea in the world and called me and said, you immediately have to buy a couple of them and donate them. And I did, you know, because I, you know, if someone wants them, they're there and they shouldn't have to pay for them. But I think it's kind of creepy.
And what do they use the money for that's paying?
Well, you pay the $50 and they make this cutout. Like, you know, the family will send a picture of the father who's, or the mother who's overseas, and they send a life-size cut out of that person.
And then do they expect you maybe to send this soldier some goodies?
No. You just sent them the cutout. The cutout is the thing. For $49.95, you know, almost $50, mm-hmm. You get this, you donate one of these cutouts. And I think it's kind of creepy.
Well, it sounds like it's a fundraising effort for maybe an organization.
No, it's not a fundraising anything. It's the cost of the, forget the $50. The $50 pays for the cutout.
Okay.
The family gets the cutout. Now the cutout replaces dad. They go.
They take it to the families.
Park.
Okay.
Right. They take it to the park. They sit him at the table for dinner. The one guy strapped the thing to his back and ran the marathon with the guy on his back. I think it's kind of creepy.
Well, you know what, Rick? If it works for them,
which is why I bought two of them,
eases their mental anguish. Eases the separation anxieties, which you have to have. If it works, I would say, hey, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, just for me, it's kind of creepy, but I'm curious your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Thought-provoking, opinionated, Rick Smith.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Oh, the new dark ages. Boy, I'll agree with that. According to McClatchy, Americans overwhelmingly think that WikiLeaks is doing more harm than good by releasing the U.S. diplomatic cables, and they want to see the people behind it prosecuted, according to the McClatchy Marist poll. Lee Mingroff, director of the Marist Institute for Public Opinion at Marist College, in Poughkeepsie, New York, said clearly people are very unhappy with it. The survey found that 70% of Americans think the leaks are doing more harm than good by allowing America's enemies to see confidential and secret information about U.S. foreign policy. Just 22% think the leaks are doing more good than harm by making the U.S. government more transparent and accountable. The greatest opposition to the leaks comes from Republicans, 81% of whom call the leaks harmful. The strongest source of support is liberals, 35% of whom think the leaks do more good than harm. Even among liberals, though, solid majority, 58%, called the leaks more harmful than good. The poll also found 59% of Americans think those who publish secrets and secret U.S. documents should be prosecuted, while 31% said the publication of secrets is protected under the First Amendment, guaranteeing a free press. Attitudes about freedom of press versus prosecution change with age, obviously. Among those age 18 to 29, 52% said the publishers were protected by the First Amendment, and 47% said they should be prosecuted. The 30 to 44 group, my group, the numbers shifted. 37% said protected by the First Amendment. 50% said hang 'em. People in the 45 to 59 group, 25% said protected, 65% hang 'em. And of course, your generation, Jake, those folks 65 and older, 20% believe in protection.
That's not my generation.
While 70% said hang them. So you're in the hangman's generation.
No, I'm not.
Well, your generation wasn't on here, so you're going to the old farm. Because it goes from 45 to 59, then nothing.
Lucky that our constitutional rights aren't up for a vote.
Oh, ain't that the truth? And it comes back down to this. I remember after 9/11, everybody just wanting to give their rights away. I just want to feel safe. Yeah, sure, take it. Go ahead, take it. If they would have pushed through that Real ID Act right then in 2002. We'd all be walking around with a chip in our head,
well,
probably.
I would bet 90%, maybe more, of the people really didn't have an understanding of what this whole WikiLeaks thing was about. I would bet.
Oh, gee, there's a bet you can't possibly lose.
Don't you think before you answer intelligently, you have at least a fundamental understanding of what transpired?
Well, I heard it on the news. Rush Limbaugh said, hang him. I don't know what Limbaugh said.
And the good Christian ex-governor said, execute him. So he must have been bad stuff, huh?
Yeah, I got to be honest. You know, I would have thought that the Republicans, that the true conservatives would have seen this. And this is what we talked about last night, that the true conservatives would have been on the side of open and transparent government. And not just because it would be an attack on Obama, but because it's keeping an eye on the store. You know, my problem is and I look at a lot of this secret stuff, the classified stuff. Who's overseeing it? Who's watching this stuff? You know, because you talk to members of Congress, you talk to, you know, like here in the state, you talk to members of the legislature. They don't know what's going on. You're supposed to be briefed on this stuff. You're supposed to get oversight, but you know, half the time, one hand doesn't know what the other hand's doing. And the more you cut government, the worse it gets. And, you know, I keep hearing this constant theme. We need to reduce the size of government. Oh, we need to reduce the size of the legislature. I've heard that here for a while. And for a couple of minutes, I thought, you know what, maybe to cut costs a little bit, it might not be a bad idea. But I got to be honest. I'm now taking the position that it would be a horrible decision to cut the side of the legislature.
What you're saying is because there would be less people involved, it would be easier for one or several heavily invested groups with a lot of money and power to take control of the legislature. That's
exactly what I'm saying. I think, in fact, I'm almost to the point where I think we should be expanding the size of legislature, expanding the size of Congress. Because as I'm getting this, It was about 1911 that we stopped, if I remember right. And I'm going to have to double check on my history on this. But if I remember right, it was 1911 when we stopped expanding Congress. Because if I remember it right, and correct me if I'm wrong, folks, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, you were supposed to have one representative for every 30,000 people at the very beginning. At the very beginning of the country, that was the kind of the, what they wanted. Now we're up to a point where one representative is representing hundreds of thousands.
Well, I mean, the truth is our country has grown.
But you end up having a situation like with Tim Holden.
Well, that would be a good question. How do they arrive with the present system? What?
Well,
is it a number or is it a maximum number?
Well, what they did is they arbitrarily stopped. They arbitrarily stopped adding people to the size of Congress. It was supposed to be one representative represents X amount of people. Then as the country would grow, you would add people to the Congress.
I'm assuming that what they've tried is to keep it as equal as possible. Now, they're not going to be able to do that, but within reason, I would imagine that that was their intent. And I would imagine that at least the Congress people in our area, I would imagine it's fairly close to representing about the same number of people. I'm sure there's a little bit of difference, but
yeah, I mean, because I'm starting to think about this, and I got to be honest, I would like to see more homogenous districts. I would like to see more people where you're not from. I don't know. I'm thinking this through. Because something's got to work better than what's going on right now. Because you look at Holden, he's in a very, very split district. And half the people are always going to be ticked off. And I would say all the people are ticked off because at no point is he doing what both halves want. So I'm wrestling with this. Because I think there's got to be an answer. There's got to be an answer to this somewhere.
Well, the formula that they're using, you realize the last couple of reapportionments, we've lost congressional delegates. I would guess in the last 10 years, we probably lost 3 or 4.
Well, as a state, yes. But if you go back to the beginning of the country, there were 65 representatives at the beginning of the country. And we steadily grew. And they just then stopped. 1963 is the last time we added anyone. In fact, 61, they had 437 members of the House of Representatives. 1963 went down to 435, and that was it. And to be honest, the population has tripled since the 1911 expansion of the House. To its current 435. So they pretty much put an arbitrary number there and said, this is going to be it. Because in 1913, they shot up to 435. And that was it. That was the last. It fluctuated a little bit for the next couple of years, but that was it. And our population has tripled. Now, I'm not saying we need triple the number of representatives, but I do think. So you have a better relationship, because I know people who've never called their congressman. They've never heard from them.
I have to say.
It's because you're active, Jake. You're into that.
But I have to say that our congressman, I mean, if you really want to call his name's in the book, he has offices in 4 or 5 different places. That's reasonable. I don't know. I'd have to think that over. There's pros and cons in that.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. We're right back to wrap this up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You know I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You work so hard to say what's right. I watch you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
All the people
when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, December 18th, if you haven't marked it on your calendar, please do. We're going to be doing our third Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays event. We're hoping that folks will come out and bring us a can of corn, something, some green beans, maybe some pork and beans, something to put into the truck so that we're able to help Project Share feed those folks who need help this winter. Also, if you've got a couple of bucks you want to throw into the till to help the emergency shelter and the food bank, that'd be great as well. And if you go to hungryandhomeless.org, you can use the PayPal account to donate a tax-deductible donation to the two organizations. The International Chamber of Commerce, I mean the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the nation's self-proclaimed champion of small business, last year took in 83% of its revenue from donors who contributed $100,000 or more, with about half of that coming from giants in the healthcare industry, according to reports from the watchdog group U.S. Chamber Watch. A victory on the chamber's top 2010 lobbying priority, extending the Bush tax cuts across the board, no matter how wealthy the taxpayer, will mean particularly huge tax savings for CEOs who head up those health industry giants. One example, Aetna's Ronald Williams, he averaged $16.2 million per year in take-home over the last three. He'll pocket an additional $875,000 tax handout next year alone, according to Citizens for Tax Justice. So you think about this, you know, each of the last 3 years, this guy's averaged $16 million a year, and he's going to get a tax windfall of almost another $1 million, $875,000. Can we afford that? I don't think so. And it's this, and what will he do with that is my question. Well, what he'll do with it is he'll accumulate wealth. and do nothing to help society.
Well, what the Republicans with this whole issue of taxes for the rich, they act like we're being meanies and we want to target the rich and we want to really stick it to them. Well, no, wait a minute.
We're going to soak them.
If your income is $5 million a year for the first $250,000, you get the same tax breaks as everyone else. It's not like we're coming in and stealing. We're just saying, hey, why don't you come down here and take the same tax breaks, reasonable tax breaks, that the rest of us are getting? That's all. Reasonable.
Yep, right there. I'm right there. And what's amazing to me is there weren't more people, there weren't more folks out there standing with Bernie Sanders. I mean, that I got to be honest. There were three people.
You know, I know that they've limited debate as of Monday, but, you know, I hope Bernie stays there till Monday. God bless him. God bless him. You know, and I hope, to be honest, I know it's going to be tough sledding for a while, but I hope this thing falls in his face. I think it's time to challenge these bastards, quite frankly.
Reuters reported today, class action landscape changed in an instant when the U.S. Supreme Court decided to review a mammoth sex discrimination lawsuit against Walmart Stores Incorporated. Even though the ruling will not be coming down for several months, some class action lawsuits against other companies are already grinding to a halt as lawyers await the outcome. The Walmart case is seen as a huge test of the power of class action suits, with the Supreme Court set to decide on whether the women suing the retailer can do so jointly. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals Wednesday ordered a separate gender discrimination case against Costco to be put on hold until the Supreme Court decides what they will do in the Walmart matter. A lower court has certified a class of all current and former female Costco employees denied promotions to senior staff positions since 2002. And less than 24 hours after the Supreme Court announced its Walmart order, plaintiffs in a race and sexual discrimination case against Best Buy asked the federal judge in California to suspend briefing on that case. So this is a pretty big thing. This Supreme Court taking this Walmart case is a pretty big thing. And I'm kind of in it's not the merits of the case. It's not whether Walmart discriminated against these people or not. It's whether these folks can come together and sue Walmart as a group. That's the decision.
And that'll be a separate decision.
And if they come back and they say, and this is kind of interesting, if they come back and say, well, you can't file a class action lawsuit, then each one of those people are going to have to sue individually, which means a good number of them will not be able to sue.
It sounds like there might be different reasons why they want to, they're not all the same. They're not suing Walmart for the same thing, or with their various infractions of Walmart.
Well, I mean, they're various infractions across the spectrum, and they're going and saying, look, all of these people at some point were sexually discriminated against or harassed or whatever. What they want to do is they want to divide and conquer,
make it more difficult and expensive. It would be.
I mean, because you know, if it's easier to take on one law firm representing one person than it is to go after a couple of law firms who were, you know, representing thousands of people. And you know, this is a question that the legislature is going to have to deal with. The Congress is going to have to deal with this stuff. We need labor law reform in the worst way, because you can't have a system set up where employers are guessing what's going to happen. And again, you know, since the Ledbetter thing, women are starting to turn around and go, wait a minute, I've been making 70 cents, 77 cents of what the guy's making. That's discrimination. And that's a lot of what these suits are. And, you know, women in most cases at Walmart were never being promoted. So, and a lot of these retail chains, it was a very male-dominated top half of the employment scale.
Or they were given a position but not the salary.
So I don't know. You know, it's a weird, weird situation. And I got to be honest. I'll make my prediction. I say the Supreme Court rules in the favor of Walmart. And it says that they cannot It'll be a 5-4 decision, saying that they're not going to be able to go forward with the class action suit. That's my guess. I think it's a pretty safe one. You don't have to be a genius to figure that out, or a clairvoyant. If I were clairvoyant, I would guess the lottery numbers so that I wouldn't have to work another day.
Question. Maybe you don't know, but since you brought up the Supreme Court, let's assume that President Obama is a two-term president.
Okay.
Within that framework, another 6 years, how many Supreme Court justices will retire, and who are they?
Well, you know Alito. You know Scalia's probably not going. You know Thomas is probably not going. You know Roberts is probably not going. You know Sotomayor's probably not going. You know Kagan's probably not going. So that's going to leave you three. Kennedy is the break in the court right now. Kennedy's the guy who he's the power broker. He's the one who sides with the conservatives most often. So if Kennedy were to retire, Obama could then swing the court more towards the center. Now if Ginsburg goes, it'll be an even break, because Ginsburg's what, 78 maybe, 77. So, you know, that for me, you know, I hope nothing bad happens to him. But I hope our good Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy, you know, he has a nice long retirement. I hope he, you know, takes some time off, maybe goes fishing, you know, does some of that stuff.
So it is possible in that 6 years that there could be as many as three.
Sure.
Is what you're intimating here.
Yeah, I mean, Kennedy's the guy I'd like to see go. Breyer is probably the next to go. I'm trying to look at how old Breyer is. Breyer was born in 1950, so he's 60 years. No, that was Alito. Breyer was born in 38, so Breyer's getting up there.
He's 72.
Right.
But for Supreme Court justice, that's not all that unusual. Well, we shall see.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean,
and the truth is, some of them, I know this happened. It just plain happened. Depending on who gets elected, maybe someone was thinking of retiring, but because of political considerations, they'll stay. That has happened.
Well, like what's her name said, Sandra Day O'Connor.
Sandra Day O'Connor, she thought Bush lost in 2000, she said, "Well, I can't retire."
Yep.
She was heard saying that at a party.
And it's kind of weird that then she turns around and she's the fifth vote on what's going to happen on Sunday.
Well, she was a conservative, but very much a moderate conservative.
Well, she was the one who kept Roe v. Wade pretty much in place. So it's going to be interesting. I'm kind of interested to see how this is all going to work itself out, because
but the Republicans have four in there that won't be, they'll have a good 20 years, it looks like.
Yeah.
Especially anyway. our favorite, Mr. Scalia.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for being here tonight. I want to thank Brett, our board op. He is in misery today. Had a little run in at the dentist. So he's done a great job moving the sliders and the tubes and all of that. So everything's good there. Thank you for being here. Thanks for everybody who called, all the folks who emailed me. Again, if you want to contact me, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any part of the program, you can always go to our site at thericksmithshow.com and download it there. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
They're stealing down.